Nick!
Gentlemen!
Nick's your buddy. Kind of guy you can drink a beer with.
Start your engine!
My papa's son wandering out a smoking gun. Now some of you would live through me and lock me up and throw away the key. Or just find a place to hide away and hope that I'll just go away. But I feel alright. I feel alright tonight. I feel alright tonight. And I'll bring you Christmas contraband and ancient tales.
All right, all right, all right. Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and we are live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. Here we are here until 5 a.m. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. We'll play them later. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Allison Shoemaker is going to join us. She's a writer, contributed to the AV Club and The Takeout. She went through every single episode of every single season of Parts Unknown, the great Anthony Bourdain show. Anthony Bourdain's birthday, it was Anthony Bourdain Day a couple of days ago. He was just a really, really special guy, and that show is magnificent. And Allison went through all of them, ranked them, and we're going to talk about that, plus a bunch of other stuff, too. She contributes to the AV Club. She's part of the Chicago Film Critics Association. So there's going to be lots to talk about with her, including the most essential episodes of Parts Unknown, to celebrate Anthony Bourdain Day from a couple of days ago. After the 2 o'clock news, we're going to be joined by a friend of mine, Tara Handren. She is an actress that I had the pleasure of directing like 14 years ago in a play called Toast to the Town. She's a terrific actress, and she's also a writer, and she performs a show called Drunk with Hope, which is a show that is it's a one-woman show that is about monologues and stories about women dealing with addiction. And she is a regional VP for Karen Treatment Centers, which helps people deal with addiction. And we're going to talk with Tara about that and about what she does and about her show. It tours around the country. She just, in fact, had a gig here in Chicago. We'll talk about that, too. We'll talk with Tara coming up after 2 o'clock. Also, we're going to talk about some incredible gadgets from the 80s that we've probably all forgotten. And to actually tie in with that, we've got some high-tech inventions that you never realized are really stupidly old. So that'll be coming up. It's also Big Brother time, as you know, and the second episode of season 21 occurred last night. So we'll do a quick review of that and then talk about some of the past winners and maybe rank some of the Big Brother winners from the past. So that's all coming up on the show. By the way, Allison is in our beautiful PPG Paints green room, and we will get her into the studio in just a few minutes from the PPG Paints green room, which is a beautiful room here on the 18th floor at 303 Wacker. And that's what's coming up on the show. It's Thursday, so get them in. 312-Triple Play Thursday, 312-981-7200. You can follow us on Twitter, at Nick D Show. And you can stay connected with us on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Let me say hello to my great producer, Tom Hush. Tom, how are you?
I'm good.
Yeah?
I'm watching the Big Brother feed right now.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Is anything happening?
They're all just kind of laying down and talking to each other.
That's kind of what it is. That's kind of what it is. I mean, essentially what the show is, if you just want to sum it up, it's lots of shirtless guys, lots of women in revealing bikinis who sit around the house and whisper. That's essentially what the show is. Because how often during an episode of Big Brother, I mean, like 80% of each episode is subtitled because they're all whispering. It's closed caption because it's all
whispering. I need you to be a pawn.
Yeah,
I need
exactly. You to be a pawn, okay, man, can you be a pawn, man? Yeah, so, but we'll get to that a little bit later on. Last night's episode, we'll talk a little bit about that. I will say this. You said when we were talking about it yesterday morning that at some point I was going to be Team Hog. Tonight, and last night that happened.
There it is.
Yeah.
There it is.
I am now officially on Team Hog. I've got a few people that I like, but I like the Team Hog. Well, I'm sorry. I keep forgetting his first name now because his name is
Hog. Is it Cliff?
Cliff, yeah.
Cliff Hog the Third.
Cliff Hog the Third. There you go. There's your all-star right there. There's your Big Brother all-star right there after the second episode of the season. So, all right. So we've got that all coming up. And in the newsroom is Vic Vaughn. Vic, how are you?
Hey, doing well. How you all doing, right, sir?
Now, you're heading off to a vacation.
Well, yeah, a little three-day weekend again. Yeah. I'm off tomorrow. I'll be going to Summerfest in Wisconsin. Yeah. And, hanging out with her family as well in Racine after that. So
yeah, you're going out there for...
Got my suitcase. As soon as my shift ends, I'll be heading to Union Station.
I walked into the newsroom to say hello. I saw the bag. I was like, did you get fired?
I've had it. No, no, thankfully, I've not been fired.
That's good. Yeah, I'm glad, too. So, well, have fun. I know you were telling me off the air that you're going up there. And Steve Earle is playing at Summerfest.
Yeah, that's the plan. That is the plan. I mean, because I'm working all night, and then I've got to catch a train. So as soon as I get to Racine, I'm going to try to jump in the bed, get some sleep, and try to be up and at Summerfest in place by 4. That's when his show starts.
I really hope you get to do it. I really hope you get to see Steve Earle.
I thought you would. Yeah, I can't wait.
Well, as you know, a Steve Earle song has opened my show for 20-something years. To Feel All Right, that's Steve Earle, and he's one of my favorite artists, he's so good, and I think he's touring with his band, The Dukes. I think it's Steve Earle and The Dukes, and they're a great band.
Awesome.
So you'll really like it. I hope you, and have a great time this weekend.
Thank you very much.
Sounds like a lot of fun. I wonder if it's going to be as hot up there. I would imagine it will.
You know, weather's going to be tricky. Because it's going to be hot and it's going to be rainy.
Yeah.
And you're at Summerfest, so
yeah.
Well, which was fun when you're 18, but not so much fun.
I can't. You know how I feel about hot weather.
I can't
stand it. And the next stretch is just going to be ridiculous because I guess it's supposed to be like 90, at least 90 for the next like 3 or 4 days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
man, that just makes me miserable. I hate hot weather so much. Mm. I have one air conditioner. I have a window unit. It's in my bedroom, so I spend a lot of time in my bedroom during days like that, just cranking the air conditioner. God almighty, ridiculous. So, all right. Well, that's coming up on the show. Again, Triple Play Thursday will commence a little bit later on. And that's 312-981-7200 for your one artist, three songs requests. My old friend Tara Handren is going to join us to talk about her work with Care and Treatment Centers and her one-woman show that she tours with called Drunk with Hope. And coming up in just a couple of minutes, we will welcome to the studio from the PPG Paints Green Room, Allison Shoemaker. She's a contributor to the AV Club and the Takeout, and we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff, but including the essential episodes of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown in honor of Bourdain Day. His birthday was a couple of days ago. So that's all coming up here on the show, so please stay tuned, and we'll do that after we break here. I took a walk through this beautiful world. Felt the cool rain on my shoulder. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, and we're here until 5 a.m. on WGN, and it is Thursday. Get your requests in, Triple Play Thursday, 1 hour, three songs. That's coming up as well as a bunch of other stuff. So I want to welcome to the studio this morning. She's contributed to the AV Club and the Takeout, a member of the Chicago Film Critic Association, and she's live in studio. And you just heard, we're going to talk about Parts Unknown. Anthony Bourdain Day was Tuesday. It was his birthday. And Allison went through every episode. You went through every episode of every season.
Mm-hmm.
Was that fun?
You know, it wasn't. It was really, I'm not going to lie, it was really hard.
Yeah.
It's a difficult show to watch, I think, under the best of circumstances, because he doesn't pull his punches when he's asking questions.
Yeah.
There are a lot of episodes that are really fun, but there are some episodes that are really difficult to watch.
Yeah.
But definitely rewarding.
Yeah.
And never dull.
Oh, never.
Not a little.
And well, first of all, tell everybody about yourself. Where are you from? How'd you get into writing and all that stuff?
Oh, I grew up in Michigan.
What part?
Grand Rapids.
Grand Rapids.
So the part of the mitten with no fingers in
there. There you go. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I grew up in Southwest Michigan and always wanted to be involved in the arts and have been really passionate about the arts and sort of figured out the best way to marry my love of writing with my love of the really incredible things that artists make is to write about those things.
Yeah.
So I sort of transitioned from trying to make the art to writing about the art, I don't know, 5 or 6 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I do, and I love it.
I dated a girl who was from Grand Haven.
Oh yeah,
yeah. And we went up there a couple of times, and then there was we went to Grand Rapids one night, and there was a place. I guess it's kind of legendary if you're Mulligan's.
Yeah,
and they have like a Mulligan stew, and it's a drink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I remember it knocked me on my butt when I had that. But I love Michigan. I think Michigan's a beautiful place.
It is beautiful.
It was funny because like I dated her. We only dated 7 or 8 months, and we dated mostly in winter.
No.
So I never was up there in the summer. No.
It's not a well. It's always beautiful.
It is,
but it's not particularly seasonally friendly.
I mean, Grand Haven is nothing but beach too.
Yeah.
You know, it's like lighthouse and beach, and that's it. So, but anyway, I digress. So, you write about just arts in general?
Yeah, I write about mostly it's film and TV. I've done a little writing about theater, occasionally some other things, and then I also write about food and drink, and sometimes sort of tangentially travel for The Takeout, which is the food and drink arm of the Onion AV Club company. So this was sort of the perfect marriage of those things.
Yeah.
And my boss, our editor, Kevin Pang, suggested doing this project. And at the time I was like, well, that sounds really fun. And like, it won't actually be all that challenging.
Yeah.
And, you know, 26,000 words later, whatever it was.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm so, so glad that we did it, but yeah.
Say hi to Kevin for me.
I've had
Kevin on the show when he used to work for the Trib.
Oh, cool.
I had him on the show and he did a series where all he did was eat cheeseburgers. And I had him on when we were covering that, and he's a lovely man.
Yeah, he's great.
So very cool. All right, well, before we jump into the Bourdain thing,
mm-hmm.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the entertainment stuff you've been writing about. Film wise, have you seen anything that you really like this year?
Yeah, I've been sort of in a bit of a lull at the moment because I've been living and breathing parts unknown.
Yeah,
but yeah, there are some really great things. Some great things coming down the pipe too.
Yeah.
I really loved Booksmart, which probably I think people, all kinds of people, can't stop talking about.
Yeah, no, it's a terrific movie.
Yeah,
I never knew that that Superbad would be so influential.
Yeah, it's really it's just very beautifully directed. Olivia Wilde did such a good job. The performances are great.
The
it's
chemistry
so
between the two leads. Outstanding.
Yeah, Beanie Feldstein is really... I mean, they're both amazing, but
yeah.
Beanie Feldstein, I've been sort of in love with her since she was in Lady Bird, which is also really great.
Yeah, sister of Jonah Hill.
Jonah Hill,
Talented family. Or what else?
There's an Alex Ross Perry movie called Her Smell.
My favorite movie of the year.
Yeah?
My favorite movie of the year.
I think it might be mine, too.
It's hard to describe how much I love Elizabeth Moss.
Oh, she's great.
I adore her. I'm a little disappointed with this season of Handmaid's Tale.
Me too.
First two seasons, amazing. Absolutely amazing. She's still great. I just think the show is spinning its wheels now.
Yeah, I cover that one for the AV Club, too. So I'm covering that every week. And this week's episode in particular, I don't want to spoil it for anyone. It just pretty much just aired. But it was really, really frustrating.
It was. I've kind of found this entire season to be that way. But man, the first two seasons were unbelievable.
Well, and it's still one of the best casts on television.
Incredible. Yeah, the acting is great. But she's having a pretty stellar year. I mean, obviously, she's got that. She's in Us.
Mm-hmm.
And she's
got some other things coming, too.
Yeah, and she's in the Kitchen with Tiffany Haddish and Melissa
McCarthy,
easy for me to say, which I think looks great.
That is quite a threesome.
Yeah,
that's a really great top line on a movie.
Yeah, so absolutely.
I'm excited about
that one. But Her Smell. I was kind of astonished by the whole thing.
Me too.
Her performance is unbelievable.
Yeah, I think the supporting performances in that film are really great too. But without giving anything away for people who haven't seen it, and please see it, it's really great.
Yeah.
The scene where she's playing the piano, right in my feelings.
It is. Somebody said to me, when they saw, because Eric Childress, you know Eric?
Yeah.
You know Eric, of course. Eric Childress is a contributor to the show, and he has been for many years. We do the Monday morning movie review segment, and he had seen it. He also covers the film festivals for us, because he goes to Sundance and he does other places. And I can't remember what festival he saw it at, but he saw it, I think it was Sundance, and he saw it, and because he knows my love of Elizabeth Moss, and he goes, not only is it a great movie, I have a feeling, he goes, Nick, I predict that I have a feeling that it'll be the first time you've ever cried at a Bryan Adams song. And I said, and then after I saw the movie, I'm like, you were right. You were right. It is such just such an incredible. And have you seen Midsommar? I haven't seen it yet.
No, not yet. Oh, I'm very
so excited.
I really liked Hereditary.
Me too.
And I also really like Florence Pugh, who's one of the leads in that. And I'm very excited.
And I like that damn wrestling movie she was in earlier this year.
I missed it, but I heard really great
Fighting
things.
With My Family. Yeah. I thought it was really good.
She's been in a couple of really great things.
Yeah,
that lady, if you haven't seen Lady Macbeth,
she's
good in that.
She's great. She's a terrific actress. Mm-hmm. What about TV outside of Handmaid's Tale? What kind of stuff on TV are you liking?
Oh, well, my favorite show of the year so far is Fleabag.
It's so good.
I know.
She's just unbelievable. She's amazing.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible talent. I also really loved Russian Doll. I loved Russian Doll so much that I recently went out and got the Russian Doll bangs, which I'm still adjusting to.
Yeah.
Russian Doll on Netflix, I think, is really great.
Yeah.
I liked the third and final season of Jessica Jones more than most people.
That's not a show that was on my radar.
It's Kristen Ritter is just really great. It's the lead in that, and sort of a nice ending to the Marvel chapter of Netflix. And, so that's great. All kinds of things.
What about Baskets? Do you watch Baskets?
Yeah. You know, I'm a little behind on Baskets. I haven't started watching this season yet, but I sort of fell in love with that one right off the bat.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. I wish Atlanta would come back on, because I think that's one of the greatest shows ever.
I think we'll have a bit of a wait for that one.
FX is doing some great work.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, like the Fosse Verdon thing was terrific, and What We Do in the Shadows is really funny.
Yeah.
They're doing some quality stuff at FX.
That episode of What We Do in the Shadows where they have the circle of the vampires?
Ridiculous.
Oh, amazing.
Well, every cameo topped each other, and it was great. and I thought that, did you see the final episode of the season?
Yeah.
That little twist that they give Guillermo at the end with his DNA test, I just think is brilliant. Yeah. And it adds like a whole new direction that the show can go into in the next season.
Totally.
But man, that cast is great. Why am I blanking? Natasha. What's her last name? I can't remember her last name. But the female lead in that show destroys me.
Oh, she's so good.
She's so funny.
I saw that cast at the Television Critics Association press tour.
Oh, sure.
And they were all really amazing and funny, as you'd think, and they have great chemistry. But the guy who plays Guillermo, I had a conversation with him where he mentioned that when he went into audition, he was like 20 years too young for the part. So he just thought, well, I have to do something to compensate. So he went out to a thrift store and bought that sweater that he wears in the pilot, and got these glasses and did something to his hair, and then went in and then played it the way that he did. And so they were like, we want to cast you, but also can you please bring in that outfit, because we want to use that outfit.
Oh, that's great.
So, isn't that fun?
That's hilarious.
So he costumed his way into a role.
That's really cool. So originally 20 years younger.
Oh yeah, that character was supposed to be considered
20-year-old. Oh, wow. Oh, I think Guillermo's fantastic. The character is great.
Yeah.
So, anyway, lots of fun writing about this stuff. Movie wise, real quick, what are you looking forward to the most?
Gosh, I have no idea. For me immediately,
it's Midsommar.
That in the immediate future, I'm really excited about that. I'm also, I'm assuming the social embargo listed. As I was on my way over here, I started seeing the first tweets about Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah.
Which I liked the most recent Spider-Man movie a lot more than I expected to. And it looks like the response to this one is pretty positive.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about Jake Gyllenhaal as like over the top.
Me too. Me too.
Marvel mode. I'm very
in a field that's obviously overcrowded. Like, I mean, every week a comic book movie comes out, mm-hmm. and some of them are really great, and some of them are Dark Phoenix. But I'm looking forward to this one. I think, you know, I didn't think that we were going to need another Spider-Man after the Andrew Garfield fiascos that came out, but the Homecoming was good.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So, and I was watching, I can't remember which late night show it was on, but Tom Holland is making the rounds, mm-hmm. and he was on, and he was telling it was Colbert. He was on Colbert, and he was telling Colbert that like the first movie was called Homecoming, and it was shot, you know, in America. The second one is called Far From Home, and it was shot in London, about 10 minutes away from where he lives. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That's cool.
I also love the fact that Tom Holland is so guilty of on the press tours of they don't let him talk because he's Mr. Spoiler.
Right.
He gives everything away. So anyway.
He can sure lip sync, though. Have you seen that? Have you seen him doing Umbrella?
Oh, it's great.
He's very, very good.
I think he's very talented. Yeah. I like him a lot, and I think he's great as Peter Parker.
Me too. So.
All right, Allison, it's great to talk to you. We're going to take a break for the news. When we come back, we'll dive into the parts unknown.
Great.
All right, cool. Allison Shoemaker is with us. She is a contributor to the AV Club and Takeout, and she watched every single episode of every single season of Anthony Bourdain's great show, Parts Unknown. And we're going to dive into that after we take a break for the news, which is coming up right now. right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. Coming up after 2 o'clock, Tara Handren is going to join us. She's a terrific actress that I had the pleasure of directing in a show a bunch of years ago at the Factory. And she is a performer and a writer of her own. She's got a one-woman show that she calls Drunk with Hope, and she tours around with that. And she works at a place called Karen Treatment Centers. And the show itself is about addiction, and we're going to talk about that and her show and touring and all that cool. And I'll get to catch up with her. I haven't seen her in a really long time. Well, I'm not going to see her because she's going to be on the phone, but I'll get to talk to her. So that's coming up here on WGN. Right now, though, I would like to welcome back to the studio Allison Shoemaker, contributor to the AV Club and The Takeout. And welcome back.
Thanks.
Okay, so Anthony Bourdain. Let's talk a little bit about just him first before we dive into this. I love Anthony Bourdain, loved Anthony Bourdain, and was like really, really devastated when I heard about his death. And the thing that I love most about I've read two of his books. I read Kitchen Confidential. Oh, and I read three of his books because I read Medium Raw and A Cook's Tour. So I loved his shows, plural, like No Reservations and all that stuff, and then Parts Unknown and all of that. But what I loved most about Anthony Bourdain, besides the fact that he was just a badass in general, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was his attitude about traveling, embracing the people around you, learning from everything that you do and eat and taste and smell in these places. And he was a terrific writer as well. And I just, and obviously a great personality and a great chef. So, and he puts all that into his show. So are you a fan?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I also read and loved Kitchen Confidential. And I really loved No Reservations. I like even The Layover, which he apparently did not care for. I like The Layover. I like Cook's Tour.
Yeah.
I just love him as a writer, obviously. And I think the show is really special. So when Kevin had this idea to sort of try to tackle all of it, I was like, yeah, okay, that sounds really fun. And it was really great. And I sort of mentioned this before, when you sit down with even just a single season of that show, it becomes apparent just how willing he was to have really difficult conversations. So it is emotionally grueling without the added context of his loss. And I've had a lot of people, when I mentioned that I was working on this, would say, I don't know how you could do that. I don't think I'll ever be able to watch Parts Unknown ever again.
Yeah.
And I understand that instinct. Yeah. I think that there are places to sort of re-enter and you can kind of acclimate yourself to the sadness.
Yeah.
But I do think it's still really worth watching because I've seen it, almost every episode twice, many of them more than twice, at least in pieces, as I was working on all of it. And I get something new out of it every time. And you start to pick up themes and the ways that the episodes sort of reflect and work in concert with each other. And you see patterns emerge and habits. And he really liked to describe beautiful water as gin clear. And that's not a thing that I would know if I hadn't sort of immersed myself.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
In this world. So, it was just like an incredible experience.
I have not gone back and rewatched any of the shows. I'd be able to, I think, but there would be a real pang of sadness while I watched it. No, I mentioned Kevin again, of sadness watching it because I admired him so much and I liked him so much. And it was such a shock when he died. I don't think anybody expected that. And then you find out it's suicide and it's just very, very sad. One of the things that I love so much about the shows that he did was his the stuff that he wrote for the voiceovers was always my favorite part of the show. Was just like his observations, the voiceovers, so beautifully written and so genuinely delivered. That was some of my favorite parts of each episode were that.
Yeah, he was rightly nominated for several Emmys for writing for that show and won some.
Yeah.
There's a beautiful section at the end of the Houston episode, which is one of my favorites. That was one that we put in our top 10. We had a 20 essential episodes.
I got
list.
That right in front of
me. Houston is in the mix there. At the end about how it's basically a response to Make America Great Again as an idea that ends with Welcome, Stranger, This Land is Your Land. And it just, it's just beautiful. He's incredible. Was an incredible writer.
Yeah.
But the words are forever,
Yeah, no, they are.
The writing remains incredible.
No, there's no question about it. And to have him write about something like that, you know, like You're Welcome and all this crap that's happening right now in the news. You watch that now, and I'm sure it had an even bigger impact.
Oh yeah,
while watching it. How many episodes total, and how many seasons was Parts Unknown on?
So Parts Unknown was on for 12 seasons.
Oh my God.
Yeah, 95 episodes, which excludes many of the seasons had an episode that you'll see, like if you're in IMDb or on Wikipedia, called Shortcuts or Prime Cuts. Maybe it's Prime Cuts, which are just clip shows, basically, which you can skip. But other than that, it was 8 episodes per season, with the exception of the last season, which was 7. And in the last season, there were 5 episodes, as we sort of would recognize them, although very different, because only one has what you assume is the final Bourdain narration. The rest have sort of bits and pieces. And then 2 specials, one called Under the Tarp, which is invaluable, just really, really worth watching, in which the people who made the show with him talk about their experience of making it very candidly. It's often really funny, really sad. They don't sugarcoat anything. You know, they talk pretty openly about how he could sometimes be difficult.
Yeah.
And then there's also an episode called Bourdain's Impact, where some sort of luminaries, critics, talk about his impact on television and his impact on travel and travel writing and food writing. And that's also good. But Under the Tarp is great.
So really now, great. What were some of the stories that were most memorable about the, you know, the crew talking about Bourdain?
There are 2 that really stand out. One, they were doing, I think it was one of the Vietnam episodes, and they were supposed to do this really brief segment where they walk into this chain to buy an egg salad sandwich, which is one of his very favorite things on the planet. And the producer, who was assigned to make sure there was a sandwich, went in and didn't notice that it was half egg salad, or like egg salad with potato, egg salad and bacon, something. It was not the right sandwich. So they go in, and he's looking at the shelf and looking at the shelf and bantering like he does, and it's not there. So they have to stop, and the producer has to go in search of another sandwich at another location. That one is really fun and funny, and also you can tell it was very tense, but they had a good time with it. My favorite, though, is they were shooting one of the dinner scenes, and Bourdain sat down across from whoever his dining companion was, and as they sat down, he looked up and noticed that there was a light already hanging, that the team had come in advance to pre-hang this light so they could move quickly. Mm-hmm. Basically, they were doing 2 locations back-to-back with almost no gap in between, and they had planned enough that the light was there when they arrived.
Right.
And he was like, oh, look, they've got a light for us already. That's great. And his dining companion said, yeah, it seems like you have a really amazing crew here. And he said, well, don't pet the baby unless it's sleeping. And they all told this story and just laughed, because, like, of course he knew he had an incredible crew, but, you know, never pet the baby unless it's sleeping.
Yeah.
That really made me laugh.
That's
There's also
funny.
A very interesting segment where the person doing the interviewing asks all of the people who were being interviewed for the show whether or not the experience was fun, and each and every one of them says no without hesitation. And then they say, go on to say it was incredible, but no, I'm like, no, you're sailing down the Congo River. You're like worried about getting arrested, and you're worried about this and that, and you're eating food that gives you some real digestive problems and not sleeping and 18-hour travel days and all of that. Of course, it wasn't fun, and that doesn't mean it was an incredible experience. Yeah. So, yeah, that Under the Tarp is really, really worth watching.
Does anybody talk about Bourdain's alcohol consumption during the episodes? Because he drinks a lot.
He does drink a lot.
Yeah.
And he eats a lot. When you think about the number of meals that he has to have in a day to make that show work, and then, of course, those meals are all presumably 45 minutes long, and we're only seeing a little bit of them.
Yeah.
Kevin did a really great interview with Tom Vitale, who's he directed 39 episodes of the show and produced many more, where he was talking about how the conversation that Bourdain and Barack Obama had in Hanoi was long, and they talked about almost nothing for almost all of it. And the clip they were able to use is actually just right at the end. They got into a conversation that was going to be usable. So you think, like, he would sit down at a table and then talk and eat for an hour, and then they'd go to another place for him to sit and talk and eat, and they'd go to another place to sit and talk and eat.
Yeah,
so,
that's a lot.
It's
a lot. I'm a big fan of Top Chef, and when I watch it, I always think about how much food the judges have to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had chefs on from Top Chef winners in the past, and you know, like, I had a couple, and they really do eat all that food. It's I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous. The you know, how many meals that the judges have to eat, especially when, you know, very early in the season when all the chefs are still there. I think to myself, I'm like, how do you eat like 8 full meals? And I just, it's kind of amazing to me.
I read this amazing anecdote where Paul Hollywood of the Great British Bake Off told somebody, some reporter, that Prue Leith, who's his new co-judge, takes home some of the leftover bakes and gives them to her pigs. So, like, if they don't finish it, she takes it home and she gives all the beautiful baked goods to her pigs.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. Yeah. How many Chicago episodes? There's one Chicago episode
Chicago episode.
And yeah. Where does he go on that one?
You know, it's sort of centered on the Old Town Ale House. They go some other places as right. well, mostly on, not entirely on the South Side, but mostly on the South Side. They also go to Longman and Eagle, which is cool. But they return to Old Town Ale House again and again and again.
Right.
Basically, it feels like the show is attempting to kind of recreate the Old Town Ale House's legendary blog. So they do interviews with people using the nicknames that they have on the blog, and it's great. It's
yeah, good, I remember that episode. I'm trying to think of what you know. A friend of mine actually cooked for him. He cooked for Bourdain. Him and Mancow were in an episode together. I think it was No Reservations. Mm. And they went to the restaurant next to the Matchbox.
Oh.
And my friend Tony Mata is the chef there. And he made Bourdain like this pork monstrosity burger that he put together. and he got, you know, an incredible, you know, complimentary review. And he was on top of the world. You know, you cook for Anthony Bourdain and he's like, this is great. Yeah. You go, oh, man. Bourdain loved the big stuff, too. Like, this thing was massive. It had pulled pork. It had a pork, you know, it had pork burger. It was just every kind of pig that you could possibly imagine piled on top of a, you know, on top of a bun. And, of course, you know, he ate it all up and loved it. And Tony came out to the table, you know, to talk to him and stuff like that. So he's in the episode.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So it was very, very cool. But that was not Parts Unknown.
Yeah.
I want to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about your favorite episodes.
Great.
Okay, cool. All right. Allison Shoemaker is here. She's a contributor with the AV Club and The Takeout. Anthony Bourdain Day's birthday was a couple of days ago. So she watched every single episode of every single season of Parts Unknown. And we have the 20 essential episodes of Parts Unknown that we are going to talk about as well. And we'll do that right after this break on 720 WGN. Is that the Stones?
Yes.
Were they in town recently? I didn't hear.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
I wish they would have got some publicity for the Stones while they were
here.
I know,
they're such a great small band.
Oh my God. Independent bands, they need help. Coming up after 2 o'clock, Tara Handren is going to join us. She's an old friend of mine, and she has written and she performs a show called Drunk with Hope, which she tours around. It deals with alcoholism and addiction, and she's also a terrific actress, and I had the pleasure of directing her years ago in a show. So that's coming up. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Right now, let me welcome back to the studio Allison Shoemaker. Welcome back, Allison.
Thanks for having me.
Contributor to the AV Club and The Takeout. Is there a website that people can check out?
Yeah, it's thetakeout.com.
Thetakeout.com. Is that simple?
Yep.
Okay, cool. We are talking about you diving headfirst into every episode of Anthony Bourdain's Parts Unknown, but you did, I have in front of me, you did narrow it down to 20 essential episodes. What are some of the essential episodes that you think and why?
Well, I mean, the first thing that I should say is that our short list was like 65. And again, there are 95 episodes, so I did a very bad job of narrowing it first. I tried really hard to cheat, to like have ties and expand it to 30, and finally we just thought, no, that's silly, and we narrowed it down. You know, it's a group of episodes that's sort of all over the map. We tried to pick things that are a little more mournful and some things that are pretty challenging. We picked one, Sicily, which he considered an abject failure. In that episode, he's supposed to go diving for octopus, and he's under the water.
I remember that.
Sees dead octopus floating through the water because his fixer has decided to just, you know, go shopping and toss the seafood into the water for him. And he sort of spirals and spends the afternoon drinking Negronis while his crew is trying to salvage the episode. So that's in there. Yeah, I, you know, we tried to span the globe, all kinds of things.
Yeah.
The top slot went to an episode we've already talked about, which is Hanoi, the episode that's best known for being the Obama episode, yeah, but which does a lot of other things, and I think that one is really, really special.
And I like that you point out a key scene for each episode. Mm-hmm. Was it easy to pull those from the episodes?
It was hard to not pick too many.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The easiest to sort of narrow down in terms of picking a specific scene was the Charleston episode, which is just outside our top 10, which has my favorite scene from any of the episodes in it.
What is that?
It is when Bourdain and Sean Brock, the chef that he follows on the show, on that episode, go to the Waffle House. And Bourdain has never been to the Waffle House.
Oh my
so
God.
He's being introduced to the Waffle House by someone who's been going his whole life and just falls in love with
it. Yeah.
Just has this incredibly joy. And it's a very vulgar. It's a very vulgar scene, which is one of my favorite Bourdain modes. He could curse like a champion.
Yeah, oh, no question
just like
about
a,
it.
Like a world-class deployer of...
Yeah. Have you ever been to a
language.
Waffle House?
I have.
Oh,
yeah. It's
God.
Been years, but yeah.
Oh man, I went down to Nashville. I dated a girl who was from whose parents lived outside in Franklin, Tennessee. So we went down to Nashville, and she's like, "I'm going to introduce you to the Waffle House," and I was blown away.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Yeah.
It's the best.
Well, that's how he felt too. He said that it made him want to get up on the counter and and I think it was something like sing "I'm proud to be American" or salute or something.
Yeah.
And "I doubt I'd be the first" was the end of the line. It's that's an incredible scene.
That's really great. Well, now where can people see Parts Unknown?
You have to sort of look around. So I was able to watch it. Seasons 7 through 11 are currently on Netflix.
Okay.
When we started the rewatch, I was on a plane flying. I think to California, and had downloaded season 7 onto my tablet or phone or whatever it was. And so the first episode I watched during the rewatch was Manila, which might be my personal favorite, even though it's not number one. It is in the top 5.
Yeah.
And I was just weeping on the plane, just openly weeping. That episode is so beautiful. But you can watch 7 through 11 on Netflix, and then CNN has most of the episodes available through their app. I was able to watch all of them through my cable's on-demand system.
Yeah, yeah.
CNN does have a couple of episodes that they pulled, but you can see most of it through their app or through CNN.com.
And go to thetakeout.com, and you can, if you want to use a guide here, we have the 20 essential episodes of Parts Unknown, and it's up right now. And you can check it out. And if you've never seen an Anthony Bourdain travel show, if you've never seen Parts Unknown, you have to.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really just an incredible experience. He was an incredible man. And everything about those episodes, he was like, he always wanted to learn something and participate. And, you know, a lot of people travel and they don't care. And they don't, you know,
mm-hmm.
He wanted to learn everything about the culture that he didn't know about. And it was, you know, you could feel that in every frame.
Sometimes he wanted to push back against incorrect ideas about a place. He went to West Virginia to sort of deconstruct the stereotypes that we make about people who live in rural areas. He went to Houston and focused exclusively on communities of color. So it's, you know, there are no cowboy hats. There's no barbecue in the sense that we think of it.
Yeah.
Instead, he goes to an Indian grocery store, and he it's just really, it's a great, great, great episode.
Yeah.
He went to Detroit. That one's very near and dear to my heart as a Michigander.
Sure, sure.
To sort of talk about what happens when an American city starts to die and everyone just acts like that's okay. It's just, or he went to New Jersey, his home state.
Yeah.
To push back against the notion that it's not an incredibly wonderful and beautiful and magical place. So he went in the dead of winter as if to make it as difficult for himself as possible to convince people,
and he
does a really great job of it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
All right, so that's all available. Check out the article at thetakeout.com. A couple of other quick things that I wanted to mention here. Patton Oswalt is a hot dog, a sandwich. Let's talk a little bit about that. First of all, I adore Patton Oswalt.
Me too.
I think he's the best. First of all, the legendary bit that he did about the Famous Bowl, the Kentucky Fried Chicken Famous Bowl,
mm-hmm.
is one of the greatest things ever. And he does one of my favorite, I mean, I adore him. I adore everything he does. But one of my favorite things bits that he ever did was about the Star Wars prequels, and that he would kill George Lucas. That is one of the funniest things I ever. So I love the guy. But you talk to him about the eternal question. Is a hot dog a sandwich?
Yeah, that's a series that we do at the Takeout that's mostly me. And usually it'll be that I'm talking to somebody for some other interview and we just throw it in there at the end. But every once in a while, somebody will just talk to me about that. For example, next week, I think it's next week, we're running Joey Chestnut, who is the champion hot dog eater.
Yeah.
So he just talked to me about whether or not a hot dog was a sandwich.
That was the entire interview.
The documentary about competitive hot dog eating that 30 for 30 is releasing.
Right.
But he was very nice about that question. Some people don't want to answer it because they think it is stupid. I'm not sure that they're wrong. But he was very game. Patton was very game.
And did he come up, did he think a hot dog was a sandwich or did he say no?
He said no. But if you break the seam on the hot dog, then it becomes a sandwich.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. It was for him, it was all about the seam. That's a common answer.
Yeah. That seems to be like it. Yeah.
Because one side is closed. It can't be a sandwich. A sandwich has to be open on four sides.
Okay. Now, where do you stand on this debate?
Oh, I am firmly neutral. I don't think I could do my job if I had an opinion. People always ask me and I say, yeah. I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay.
I think they're delicious. How about that? And I don't think you should put ketchup on them.
I've said this a million times. If you are over the age of 5 and you put ketchup on your hot dog, you should go immediately to jail.
That's what Obama says. They talk about in Hanoi, they talk about putting mustard and ketchup and all kinds of things on hot dogs.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
All right. Mountain Dew created a soda designed to pair with KFC's original recipe chicken. What in God's name's happening here?
We get a lot of emails from brands. In this case, they basically decided to do the Baja Blast thing. If you've ever had Baja Blast, that was created for Taco Bell initially. So this is a very special, I think, sort of sweet tea influenced Mountain Dew that was created for KFC. I don't know. It's silly.
Yeah. Well, all right. I don't do the I don't do the caffeine, so I don't know what any of that stuff.
Tastes like sugar water.
Yep, sure it does.
And looks like no color found in nature.
Wow. Well, you know what? It's been so much fun talking to you.
Oh,
you should come. You should come back again soon.
I would love to.
Yeah, and we can talk about some of the stuff you write for AV as well.
Sure. Yeah.
And what do you got coming up? Anything? What else can we look for? Writing wise.
I write for the Takeout most days. News. Sometimes we're working on a story right now about which classic cocktails you can turn into snow cones. I think that's going to be really fun.
Okay.
And then I'm covering The Handmaid's Tale weekly. I've got some other things sort of percolating there, but the TV schedule changes so fast.
Yeah.
I've got some other non-review things coming out about Handmaids as well.
Okay,
some
cool.
Interviews and stuff.
Cool. Allison Shoemaker, a real pleasure.
Thanks. Thank you so much for having me. A pleasure for me as well.
So much fun. Contributed to the AV Club and the Takeout. Go to thetakeout.com and you can watch Parts Unknown with Allison as your guide. Okay. All right. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up next. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 o'clock. It's Thursday, Triple Play Thursday. Get your requests in now. That's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Coming up a little bit later on, we're going to be talking about high-tech inventions that were actually old and some gadgets from the 80s. And again, the second episode of Big Brother 21 aired last night, and we're going to talk a little bit about that and go back in time and talk about some of your favorite. We'll rank the winners of past Big Brothers. So there you go. It's 312-981-7200. That's the phone number for talk and text. You can also follow us on Twitter at Nick D Show, and you can stay connected with us on Facebook at facebook.com/Nick D Show. My next guest is someone I haven't actually seen in a long time. I had the pleasure of actually directing her in a show. I think it was like 14 years ago. It was a great show called Toast of the Town. And she was in it. She is the regional VP for Caron Treatment Centers. She's an actress, a writer, and a performer. I've had the pleasure of working with her. And she was just in town with her one woman show called Drunk with Hope. We're going to talk about that. It's going to come back to Chicago as well. And I wanted to welcome her back to the show. And it's Tara Handren. Hi, Tara.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. So good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you, too. Boy, was it 14 years ago, huh?
was. That was because that was one of the last shows I did in Chicago before I moved to Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
And it was fantastic. I loved it.
Yeah, we love that show. That's one of my favorites that I ever did at the factory. And then, you know, for the 20th anniversary a few years ago, we remounted it.
Because
we chose the ensemble and the people at the factory wanted to do some like retrospective and pick their favorite shows, and that ended up being chosen for that season. And it was three shows. It was White Trash Wedding and a Funeral. It was that one, and it was Ren Faire were chosen to celebrate the 20th anniversary. So there you go.
I love it.
Yeah, you were very funny in that show. First of all, tell everybody about your background. Where are you from?
Way originally, I'm from New York, born and raised, but I moved to Chicago shortly after college and loved it. Chicago, I still miss it. I keep trying to get my husband to fall in love with it the way I did.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fantastic. And, you know, I moved for graduate school and then got another job. But, that's kind of like, that's how I got to Chicago and then left Chicago.
And did the acting bug hit you early, Tara?
It did. I mean, I kind of joke. I feel like it's very cliche. You know, I was one of those little girls growing up, saw Annie on Broadway, and even before that, had a real desire for singing and performing. And it kind of went in different directions, but, you know, I went to NYU for acting and really focused on that after graduating.
You went to NYU, huh?
I did.
Yeah,
I did.
You didn't run into Felicity while you were there, did you?
No. Actually, I had her as a teacher, if you can believe that. I know, it's funny. I actually had, and we were able to call him Bill, William Macy.
Oh, yeah.
Bill and Felicity were teachers, and it was one of the last times they were doing this particular workshop up in Vermont with the Atlantic Theater Company, and it was just before they were getting, I mean, they were already famous, but, like, it was before I think they were kind of no longer really going to teach. It was a great experience.
Yeah. it was funny. I'm glad that you answered the question. That was a great answer, but I was making a joke. I meant Felicity the TV show, because it took, because... Felicity went
oh
to
my
Felicity
right.
went Felicity went to NYU. So that's
yes. Oh my gosh, I mean Felicity Huffman is so current that I was not even thinking Felicity.
Yeah, well, you know
what
I mean, the show left like 20 years ago, so it's my fault
but
for bringing up a reference.
Great.
Yeah, it was a great one of my favorite shows of all time. So,
well, Nick, yeah. I watched that show because of you.
You did?
You told me about that show. Yes, and then I totally rewatched it, and then they I don't know, this was a gazillion years ago now, and then they stopped showing the rerun.
So, you know what's really funny is, if you remember our play, one of my listeners sent me an actual still from the TV show Kaz. Do you remember the running jet?
Yes!
Running
yes!
I have it hanging in my office, because I've talked about Kaz and Ron Liebman on the show before and how it became like a really great running gag in our show.
My God, I love it.
Yeah. So now when you were in Chicago, you were doing the auditioning stuff, because, I mean, you auditioned for me and you got a role. What were some of the theater companies that you worked with and some of the shows that you did while you were here in town?
So I worked, I was really fortunate that right away I got introduced to folks at the Griffin Theater. And so one of my first shows was a children's show with them. And then I actually was a company member for a while, and we did, Loving Little Egypt, Shake Your Groove Thing, a lot of different shows with them. And then I started doing sketch comedy and really kind of just went on an audition and ended up in one of the sketch festivals that was one of the earliest ones that kind of happened in Chicago. And I don't think they'd have it anymore. But, and then I was auditioning for other shows and did the show at Factory. I did a show with Tim O'Malley, who is a Second City. I was in his show, God Show, that was produced by Second City. And so I got to do some pretty fun stuff.
That's cool. Now, what made you move to D.C.?
So even though, I was in Chicago and I was acting and I loved it, I was feeling sort of, between shows, just kind of wanting to do more with my time than, you know, what I was doing in terms of just sort of my day job. And I thought, well, I probably should go back to school. And I looked at some programs in Chicago, and one thing was interesting, but it was a PhD at Northwestern. I was like, I don't know if I need a PhD. I thought, well, if I'm going to move back to the East Coast, what about D.C.? Well, if I'm going to move to D.C., well, let's look at Georgetown. So I did, and they had this interdisciplinary kind of communications degree that really pulled together. It's called the Communication, Culture, and Technology Program, and just pulled together all of my sort of various work experiences and then all my performance stuff. And I got to really focus on, like, gender studies and communication theory, and then eventually turn my thesis into the show that is now Drunk with Hope, which I hadn't really planned that, but that's what happened.
That's what it turned into then.
Yeah, that's great.
You've been performing this around the country, correct?
I have. When I first wrote it, I reached out to Norm Holly, a director that I worked with at Second City, and he just sent me a really short email. He's like, "This is fantastic," or something, and I was like, "Okay." I was like, "If Norm likes it, that's good," And he said the best thing to do is, you know, submit it to festivals. That's a great way to, like, get it out there, get reviews, and that's exactly what I did. And that really did provide the foundation for it. So the D.C. Fringe Festival, Hollywood Fringe Festival, Chicago Fringe Festival. I submitted it to the United Solo Festival in New York City, so I got to do it up there. And so, yeah, that really kind of got it going. And then when I started working for Karen, because of the subject matter of the play being about, like, women and alcoholism and addiction and recovery, that really opened doors for her, because suddenly I was talking to people and the play would come up and they'd say, "Oh, you should come do that for our patients," or, "Gee, we're doing an alumni reunion in West Virginia, so you should come do it." And so it really kind of has grown quite a bit from there.
And how long ago did you write the show? And have you been traveling a lot for years, a couple of years, or how long?
Yeah, so I completed it in 2008. That was when I first presented it at Georgetown. And enough people who came to see it said, "Look, if you did this again, I would bring my friends." So I got my friends together. We self-produced it at a theater here in D.C., H Street Playhouse, and they were awesome, and we got the Washington Post to come, and that was, like, the first. And then, so I'd say for, like, from 2009 to, I guess, like, 2011, I didn't perform it all the time, but it was during those couple of years where I was doing it in festivals. I was doing it pretty sporadically. And then when I started working for Karen, I had a regular gig at a treatment center here in D.C. called the Colmack Clinic. They're a great intensive outpatient place here, oldest one in D.C. And their CEO at the time was like, let's try it with our patients. And they really liked it. So what was nice is that was kind of like a regular gig for me.
Yeah.
And then I would get these other ones where, like, occasionally, like, oh, I was booked to do it at, like, a college up in Jersey, or, you know, a festival or a alumni event. And so, yeah, so it kind of went from there.
Okay. All right, cool. Well, Tara, hang on, okay?
Sure.
Okay, Tara Handren is with us. She's a performer and a writer. And when we come back, we're going to talk about her one-woman show, Drunk with Hope. She was just in town with it, but she's going to come back because she tours around a lot with it. And we're going to talk about where she works, which is Karen Treatment Centers. And that's all coming up right after we take a break here on 720 WGN. Welcome back. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Triple Play Thursday. So get your requests in now. One artist, three songs. We'll play them in a little bit. 312-981-7200. All right, let's get back to our conversation. Tara Handren is with us. She is a performer and a writer. She also works for Karen Treatment Centers out in D.C. And I had the pleasure of directing Tara, who was terrific, in a play that I directed years ago called Toast to the Town. And we're talking about her one-woman show, Drunk with Hope, which she tours around the country with. Tara, welcome back.
Hey.
So tell me about Drunk with Hope.
So Drunk with Hope is a runs about 1 hour, mm-hmm. no intermission. And what it is it tells the story of a woman named Hope, which provides sort of the arc of all these different characters I play, and kind of their path from different different experiences with drugs and alcohol, different, you know, I won't even call them all bottoms. You know, I mean, we talk about with alcohol and drugs and people hit a bottom and they tend to then make some kind of change. And, you know, I like to let the audience decide, like, where these characters are with it. I mean, they're clearly in different ways having problems with substances and other things. And so you have Hope and all these different women, different, you know, I purposely created these characters out of my thesis based on many of them based on women that I know personally, some, that I didn't know as well, but, you know, spoke with those women and asked them if I could, you know, incorporate their story, incorporate their experiences. And in some cases, full-on compilations of my experiences, other women. Like, I mean, that's the thing with alcoholism and addiction and substance abuse is that so many things can happen when someone is caught up in that you can do a whole compilation of many people's experiences, and it's really all pretty darn feasible.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, oh, I know, like, I know exactly yeah. what you mean, Tara. I know exactly what you mean.
Like, so-and-so ate a sneaker and yeah. ended up on the brown line, and then,
yep.
you know, I'm like, oh, yeah, that could happen.
Yeah.
yeah.
So you put your own personal experiences in it as well?
I did.
Yeah.
I did. Because I had my own problems with alcohol, you know, and I started drinking at age 15, and the thing is like it was doing something for me, you know. I mean, the fact that I felt like at 15 years old, I was like, wow, like this is really good, and I need this regularly, you
yeah.
know, like, which is not really normal. You know, I hit it, and I managed to like get through high school and college and all that stuff. But yeah, I had a bunch of experiences. I thought, you know what, I feel like these could be woven in to again show some more sort of like nuanced and less stereotypical at times photographs, if you will, or snapshots
yeah.
of someone struggling with alcoholism.
Yeah. Well, and tell me about the Karen Treatment Center.
So Karen is, it's a wonderful, wonderful inpatient facility. It is in the hills of Pennsylvania. That's our main campus. And then we have a facility in Florida. We have been around for over 60 years, and it was started by a husband and wife, Dick and Catherine Karen. Dick was an alcoholic. He had finally, you know, gotten better, and they said, look, like, you need to make sure you help other people. And so he got home, and he was like, all right, honey, we got to help other alcoholics. So, you know, let's make sure we can put them on the sofa in the spare bedroom. We'll have you know, our daughter, Linda, she's going to have to sleep on the floor tonight.
Yeah.
You know, and they just threw themselves into helping families, and it's grown into this really, you know, this world-class facility that, you know, other people look to, you know, in the industry of like, gee, what are the best practices, and what are, you know, how do we better help people and families? Like, oh, now, okay, trauma. You know, everybody's realizing how big a deal trauma is. And you know, we've been doing that for a while and working on that and how that ties into people getting addicted to substances and frankly, other behaviors.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like an amazing place. It really does.
It is. And I, you know, I personally have, I have family members who have gone there, people I love. We give away millions of dollars in scholarship treatment every year. And I have friends who would not have been able to go there had they not gotten a treatment scholarship. So it's a special place.
Yeah. It must be really gratifying to one, work there, and two, to have this play, Drunk with Hope, affect people. I mean, that must be really gratifying for you.
It's pretty incredible. And what's amazing is that it wasn't as though I had totally like had it all planned out this way, because I really didn't. And there was something really sort of, amazing and sort of divine about sort of listening to my gut of like, okay, time to go to grad school. Okay, this is what your thesis needs to be. Oh, and you need to let them let you write a play. Like, in fact, like I feel like I have to mention, like, Karen Zacharias, who has become this really, you know, they're doing her plays in theaters, you know, all over the country now. Like, she was my thesis advisor and advised me when I wrote my play and encouraged me. And then to get to, you know, on when I'm not getting to perform, you know, talk to families, help families, fundraise. Like, it's an enormous gift to be able to feel like, wow, like I'm getting to help people, and especially with my art. You know, I mean, like,
yeah.
You know, we don't always get to do that with theater. That's... Like, I feel like I got to do Toast of the Town with you, which was so, I love that. And by the way, I feel like I need to tell listeners, you know, you are such a great director.
Oh.
And you let me do Arabella when Laura McKenzie had to go to another show.
Yeah.
And I just, you know, but you don't always get those gigs, you know, you just don't. And so to have something that's mine that I'm like, wow, I get to do this, and it's like, it's all me, and I get to do all these different characters, you know, it's pretty, and it's making an impact, you know, which is cool.
Very, very cool. And now, you were just in Chicago, and how'd that gig go? How'd it go?
It went so well. It was a benefit performance for a place called Ignatia House. So Chicagoans, take note, Ignatia House, Sober Living for Women in Chicago. They've been around since like 1974, nonprofit. I have dear friends who literally, you know, started their recovery there 20 years ago and still are sober and helping other people. And so did this as a benefit for them. And the audience was wonderful. And just that same kind of reaction of like, oh gosh, Tara, like you got us thinking. And I was laughing and then I was crying and then I was laughing again. And I was like, yeah.
It's interesting because you're doing a show basically about alcoholism and recovery at a theater company that that enjoys a beverage or two every once in a while.
Yep, totally. And you know what? And that's the thing, though. It's like there are plenty of people who can, you know, enjoy. We'll just keep it to alcohol because I don't know if there are like recreation heroin users and cocaine. I mean, that's
right.
A little...
right.
But certainly, that we know there are people who can enjoy alcohol and enjoy it safely, and so great. But there are definitely people who like gluten and other things. Like they have an allergy. Like I have an allergy, and I break out in blackouts. Just not good for me.
It's no. It's one of those things. We were talking about Guinness the other morning on the show, and I think Guinness is one of the greatest drinks of all time. You know, but I can't ever taste it again because if I have one, I'm going to end up having 20. And that's just,
I hear you.
The way it is. June 11th of a few weeks ago, 4 years for me. So,
oh my gosh, that's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's really cool.
Yeah. And Tara, let me just say, I was up to about a half a bottle of Jameson a day. So,
And that's not good for anybody.
No, it's not. It's not. Well, listen, it was really great to talk to you again. And the next time you come to Chicago, we have to have a coffee or something, okay?
Absolutely. I would love that. And just thank you again, Nick. And, you know, just I'm so grateful for the getting to work with you. And, you know, I think you do. And, like, I love that you have this show and everything you talk about and do is, like, it's really good stuff. So thank you so much for having me.
I appreciate it. It was great to work with you. Is there a website where people can follow along? Is there a website for Karen? Is there a website for you that people can check out just to get more information?
Yes. So there's my personal website where I have everything about the show and upcoming shows, and that's just, it's www.tarahandron.com. So TARAHANDRON. And then for Karen, also pretty simple, www.karon.org.
Okay, Karen, that's with a C. Karen with a C.
That is with a C.
.org. Okay. Tara, it was so great to catch up with you. Congratulations on everything, okay?
Thank you so much, Nick.
Okay, take care.
Okay.
Right, there you go. Tara Handren. She's great. I loved working with her. She's terrific. And I think she's doing really important work at the Karen Treatment Centers. And her one-woman show is Drunk with Hope. She's touring around the country with it, and she's going to bring it back to Chicago soon. Great to catch up with her. And just so grateful for the kind of work that she and the Karen Treatment Centers and her one-woman show are doing. It's important stuff. Real important. All right, let's take a quick break here on 720 WGN. Yeah. We had a ZZ Top song yesterday with Jeff Beck that was requested. It's Triple Play Thursday right now. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. Who requested the ZZ Top?
That's coming to us from Ike.
Ike, 80s. There you go. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago, and we're here till 5 a.m. Again, Triple Play Thursday. Get him in now, 312-981-7200. Coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. At 6 o'clock, Steve Cochran with your morning drive. And I'll be joining Steve Cochran and the gang at 6:20 to talk about the weekend's movies and some other entertainment stuff that we will get to. Love being on with the Steve Cochran Show gang. They're awesome, and it's fun to be a part of it. And I love Steve. He's the best. So that'll be coming up. Stay tuned for that. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We're about to jump into the best gadgets of the 80s. Anybody remember the 80s? So some fantastic high-tech stuff that we have. And we're going to go through this, and I'm looking at the article right now, and we have the article linked up on our Facebook page if you would like to check it out. It's actually 80 gadgets from the 80s, the best 80 gadgets from the 80s. And we also have another article from Cracked that we're going to tie into this, and it's high-tech inventions that you never realized were stupidly old. Everybody thinks we're moving forward, but some of these things are stupidly old. So That's coming up as well. But if you want to jump in, what do you guys still have? Some of the old gadgets from the 80s. Like, I'm looking at the picture here. The first big picture that you see is, of course, the Walkman, the Sony Walkman. Now, Tom, you're too young to have ever had a Walkman.
Well,
did you have a Discman?
No, I got the off brand. I got the CD Bro or whatever.
The CD Bro?
Yeah, I don't know what it was actually called, but
CD Bro.
Yeah.
Hey, Vic, is that what you listen to all your new music on the CD, bro?
I love it. I'm cracking up because I'm picturing Esmeralda would buy it. I know it just from the title alone.
The CD, bro. We don't know if that's the actual brand name, but it did the same thing as a Discman. Yeah.
But I did not have a Walkman.
You didn't have a Walkman? Cool, you're too young. By the time we were born in 93, and we were well into CDs at that point.
Yeah.
You know, cassettes were definitely either out or on their way out.
I mean, I still had when I was very young, we had cassettes.
Yeah.
But it was mostly like books on cassette, or like I had The Lion King on cassette.
Yeah.
But that was pretty much the extent of it.
You know, the only album that I've ever owned on every format, and I mean 8-track, you know what an 8-track is, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I didn't want to have to tell you what an 8-track was. I had it on 8-track, I had it on cassette, had it on album, vinyl, and on CD. The only album that I've had on all of the possible formats, Zeppelin 2.
There you go.
That was the only one. This is how stupid 8-tracks were, because 8-tracks were stupid. But they were, we had them. I was born in 65, so obviously the 8-track phenomenon was, a part of my youth, no question about it. But this is how stupid they were. The 8-track, you would pop it into your 8-track player. It was called an 8-track, but there were only 4 tracks on it. The first track would have make 3 songs, and you would click over to the second track, and they would have like 3 songs, and then the third track, and then the fourth track. They would separate the album into like 2 or 3 song groups, and you could click the thing and go to either track 2, which had those 3 songs. Just the stupidest thing of all time. But here's how they're like the limited space on the tape itself. This is some of the great decisions that whoever the idiots who mass produced the 8-tracks decided they would do. By the way, we still have cart players in this building. I don't know if you know that or not.
We got cart players?
Yeah. You know who's responsible for keeping the old technology here at the station?
Who?
We call it the Steve King Memorial Technique. We got reel-to-reels here, man.
I've seen the reel-to-reels.
We got the reel-to-reels. We got carts. We still have some carts left around, cart players. Those were fun days when you'd have to stick the carts into it. Ridiculous.
I love the reel-to-reels, though. They kind of look like a lathe, Like you gotta have some real magic going on.
Yeah. And people learn to edit on those things. It's really pretty cool. But here's the stupid technology let me give you an example. For the 8-track of Led Zeppelin 2. if the songs don't fit entirely on the given amount of time that you have on each track. So here's what I remember about listening to Zeppelin 2. You know the song Ramble On.
Of course.
Everybody knows the song Ramble On. For some reason, it's about a traveling guy, and then somehow Gollum, the evil one, creeps away with his girlfriend, which doesn't make any sense. But he's in the darkest depths of Mordor, so yeah. Anyway, the combination of like being a rambling lover and, you know, Middle Earth, it doesn't seem to work. But anyway, I don't care about the lyrics. The song rules. So halfway through Ramble On, it would fade to silence because there would be no more time left on that first track. So it would fade to silence halfway through the song, and then it would click over to track two and then fade up from where the song would. So they would interrupt the song.
And this was considered like technology. This was like, you know,
well,
real high tech,
like,
stuff.
Yeah, man, it's an 8-track, man. But it's, and I can tell you exactly where, because I used to listen to, you know, I Zeppelin 2 is my favorite Zeppelin album, and I know that I know every single note of that album by heart. And so, and I would listen to it on all formats, and when and on that format, it would break at Ramble On. It would actually fade down at the part I'm talking about. Was in the darkest depths of Mordor, I met a girl so fair. And it would go down to silence, wait a couple of seconds, over to you know, track two, a click over. But go, the evil one! And then the volume would come back up. So they would split the songs in half, so there'd be a moment of silence and a click over to the next track if it didn't fit on the allotted time on the tape.
Now, did they think no one would notice?
Well,
or they were just like, well, I mean, this is the price of technology.
That's the price of technology, man. And you know what? It was the 70s. Everybody was high. So they didn't care. Everybody's blowing weed, listening. You know, they've got their 8-track player. They're blowing weed. They're listening to Zeppelin 2. And then when Ramble On would fade out, you'd be like, wait a minute, man. What happened? Oh, there it is. Like, you would just think for a second, what happened to the song? Oh, it's back. See, that's the kind of incredible technology that we have here. But the Walkman is featured as the big picture here, and I had a Walkman. I had the Walkman. I had the Discman. Stupid thing about the Discman was that if you were walking around, it would skip. Like there was no, I mean, like, you know how the disc would skip.
Of course.
So, you know what? The other things that I love, we're going to be talking about these 80s gadgets. If you have any of these old gadgets laying around, you want to talk about them, or if you want to remember some of these other 80s gadgets that were like, you know, or even 70s gadgets that were so hot at the time, they were going to be revolutionary. But the other thing about the Discman was, besides it skipping, you could only, like, now you have your phone or whatever, and you have like, or an iPod or whatever it is, and you have like 9,000 songs on it. This was one disc. If you left the house, you're not going to carry a bunch of CDs on you. So you would be required to listen to one album, and that was it. Like if you were on a long trip or something, you know, or you were walking to work and it took you like an hour to get to work, you'd have to listen to just that one album on the way to work and on the way back, unless you carried a backpack full of CDs, which I guess some people did. So I don't know, but 80s technology. Vic, did you ever have a Walkman?
I had the Discman.
You
I
had
didn't
the Discman.
I didn't get the Walkman.
No. Okay, the Walkman was just,
you know what, I had a little bit, I think it was still, yeah, this would have been the 80s. So before I had a Discman, I had a tape recorder, Nick.
Oh, sure.
And I know legitimately, that's what I was using to listen to music, because I remember when I went to visit my grandfather's farm in New Mexico.
Yeah.
I brought a tape recorder, and it had, instead of like two headphones, for some reason, it came with one. It had a white wire that you plug into it, and it had, so one of your ears got to listen to music.
Oh, man. That's like, yeah, an old transistor radio.
Yeah.
Like the old AM/FM one transistor radios. Plug. That's how I used to listen to, I used to listen to Eddie Schwartz like that.
Yeah. That's the same recorder I would use when I would sit by the radio and listen to music.
Yeah.
And if my favorite song came out, I'd press play. And what did you press?
Play and record.
Real quickly so you could record.
Play and record at the same time. Yeah. technology. But the Walkman was a creative, you know, and you know what else I love is these videos that are online of like little kids trying to figure out what the hell a Walkman is. Have you seen these videos?
Yeah, of like they don't understand how
they're
a
like,
tape works.
What is this? Yeah, they have no idea. Like there's like this 7, 8 year old, 12, even like 12, 13 year old kids. Mm-hmm. And they bring out a Walkman, and they go, okay, this is a Walkman. They're like, what the hell? And they don't know. They can't understand it. They don't know how it works. And then when they finally get it to work, they're like, well, there's only one. There's only a couple songs in here. Because, you know, they're used to having thousands of songs
in
there.
Well, yeah, on a device half the size.
Yeah, and oh, the Walkman's bulky, too. And they're like, what the hell is this? You know, they didn't understand why you had to turn the tape over.
And honestly, I used VHSs as a kid. If you put a VHS and a VHS player in front of me right now, it might take me a minute.
Oh, wow.
I'm so used to just being like, well, let's see what's on Netflix, click.
Yeah.
That, or even just Blu-ray, just boop.
Yep.
It would take me a minute.
Yeah. It's weird, man. It's weird. Here's Glenn on WGN. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, good morning, Nick. How you doing?
All right.
I'm just sitting here on Highway 80 going nowhere. It's doing nothing.
Okay.
The 8-tracks, remember what you had to used to do when you got a loose loop?
Yeah.
You had to kind of snap it really quick?
Well, either that...
Yeah,
exactly. Also, yeah. If you had like that, you'd have to snap it, and then also like in the world of cassettes, if the tape came loose, you have to stick a pencil.
Yeah, they have a pencil,
and then turn it so that the tape caught up.
Did you remember hearing about a thing called a bone phone?
A bone phone?
I think it came out in the '80s. I heard about it when I was in California. It was like a radio that was actually. It wrapped around your neck. Supposedly the music was supposed to vibrate through your body.
Oh yeah,
I wanted one of those things so bad, but they were kind of pricey back then.
Yeah, sure.
It just didn't take off though.
No,
for
no,
some
it's,
reason.
It's kind of a,
for some reason.
For some reason, yeah, we can't figure that one out. Yeah. All right, Glenn. So, take care, buddy.
Hey,
see ya.
Hey, bye.
There you go. The bone phone. All right, we got a break here, and then we'll jump into old gadgets, specifically from the 80s. There's some really ridiculous stuff in this article. And if you want to check it out, complete with pictures and descriptions, we have the article linked up on our Facebook page, which is why you should like our Facebook page. It's interactive, and all the stuff we're talking about is there. Tara's homepage is there, and Allison's article about Bourdain. All that stuff is on our Facebook page. Whatever we're talking about, you can learn about and read about and connect with on our Facebook page. So go there and like it right now, facebook.com/NickDShow. All right, we'll take a break. We come back. 80s gadgets and old gadgets. If you got some, share it with us, or if your memories, 312-981-7200. This isn't ZZ Top.
That is my bad.
Okay.
That is my bad.
I was going to say.
That is my bad.
But you just did it because that would be a theme for what we're talking about. And that makes sense. And it's fine because I just pictured Phoebe Cates coming out of a swimming pool. So every time I hear that song, I have that lovely image. But ZZ Top was requested by Ike for Triple Plate Thursday.
May I make up for that for Ike real quick here?
Here we go. You're crazy about it, there you go.
There we go. Sorry about that, Ike.
There you go. Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. One artist, three songs. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Coming up is Steve Grzanich at 5 with the opening bell, and also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Hey, we're talking about old technology, specifically 80s gadgets. And we want to reminisce a little bit about some of that stuff. We got a text here from Camille that says the AWA 1983 version FM cassette player that recorded was boss.
It's a very 80s adjective.
It's also a very 80s kind of way to describe something as boss. So let me go through a couple of these items. We got some text and some calls coming in at 312-981-7200. The Etch-A-Sketch Animator 2000. Ooh, I'm looking at a picture of it. It's from Ohio Art, the Etch-A-Sketch company. The Etch-A-Sketch Animator 2000. Anybody remember this? It's from the year 1986. Several retro bloggers and tech sites have panned this specific Etch-A-Sketch for its complex learning curve. They also failed to recognize the device for some of the cutting-edge innovations brought to the table. The Animator 2000 stepped things up with the ability to do 22 frames of pictures and 99 frames of animation. While highlighting an auto shut-off option for battery preservation. A cartridge slot was also added for the expanded memory and some video games. Wow. All right. How about the Audio-Technica Soundburger? It's from 1983. The Audio-Technica Soundburger. It looks ridiculous, may I just say that. 1983, that was Audio-Technica thinking when naming its portable vinyl player. What were they thinking? Who cares? The Soundburger invited crate junkies to take in 45s and LPs anywhere. Granted, it exposes one's record collection to environmental hazards. Its tremendous sound quality encouraged owners to take that risk when they were out and about. So this was a portable record player.
Yeah, you can still get those, too.
And you can stick the record in, and it's called the burger because it should have been called the bun because the record is actually the burger.
Well, now you can get them now, and they're more like a suitcase. It's like a suitcase
that you can just carry around with you.
Yeah, not great sound quality.
I would imagine. Yet. How about the Armatron? And I'm looking at it right now. It's the Radio Shack Armatron. That's from 1980. This looks really futuristic. It looks like one of those automated arms that you see on factory assembly lines.
Yeah, just like reaching down.
Except that you have it in your house. There was really nothing exciting about Tomy's user-controlled toy. Then again, there wasn't anything like it. Armatron was just a crane-operated arm capable of picking up small objects through the use of two attached joysticks at its base. It also came with a countdown timer to build on the anticipation of lifting small boxes and spheres. Just one of the simple joys of being a kid in the early 80s. The Armatron. Wasn't that one of Batman's villains, too, the Armatron?
He's going to lift up Gotham.
Let's see. Here's Trucker Rich. Hey, Rich.
Hey, Nick.
Hey.
Back in the 80s, remember when VCRs really didn't have rewinds on them, or they recommended you didn't use the rewind so you didn't wear out the belts and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you had the separate box for rewinding the tapes?
It was just, the only thing it did was you would stick it in, push it down, and it would rewind the tape. That's the only function it served. And you had it either on top of your VCR or on next to it.
Right. And mine was, mine looked like a 63 Chevy Corvette split window coupe.
I unfortunately just had a plain black one that, would open up, you stick the tape in, top loader, push it down, and it would rewind.
Right, and I feel ashamed now that you brought up Armatron. We had one.
You had an Armatron?
Yeah. Huh. Played with my nephews and stuff.
Yeah.
It just like the thing said, throw a bunch of Legos down there and see how many you could pick up before the timer went off.
Jeez, that sounds like a fantastic playtime toy right there, the Armatron.
It kept them fascinated because it was, joysticks and looked like the robots they were watching on cartoons.
Sure,
but
sure. Yeah,
I didn't buy it specifically for me, but I bought it for the nephews to play with when they came over.
All right. So, okay. All right. Thank you, Rich.
Yep. Have a good one.
You know, the VCR rewind, back in the day of video stores, you would get a fine if you brought back the tape and it wasn't rewound.
Ooh. Wait, really?
Yes. Yes. Have you seen the movie Be Kind Rewind?
Well, yeah, I know. That used to be the Blockbuster slogan on all the
they would fine you. You would get it, you'd have to pay. Like $1.50 or $2 if you return the tape not rewound.
Well, we always rewound our tapes.
Well, that's the thing. It's like that's one of the reasons why people got the VCR, the VHS rewinder. Because and they also said, "Oh man, you shouldn't use the rewinder in your on your VHS because it's going to roll out it's going to ruin the tape and it's going to ruin the heads and inside." So that's why you would get it. So there were two reasons. One, you always wanted to make sure that you did rewind the tape so that you wouldn't get fined that buck or two at the video store. And then two, you didn't want to ruin your VCR by rewinding too many tapes.
My dad would get really upset if we didn't rewind our tapes.
Well, that's because he would have to pay.
Well, not just even for rental. If my mom did not rewind those copies of Absolutely Fabulous Series 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Ooh. You get very upset, very cross.
Your dad was a fan of AbFab?
Who wasn't a fan of AbFab?
Did you see the movie a few years ago?
I did.
I loved it.
Oh, my God.
I loved it.
I was in tears.
All right, let's take a break. We're talking about some gadgets. Everybody hang on. We got some phone lines open, some text lines flying. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. And when we come back, I will tell you about the Braun Micron Vario 3 Universal. Whatever the hell that is, and I'll explain what it is. All right, the news is coming up right after this.
The numbers are in.
WGN Plus is where Chicago comes for podcasts.
Here's what's going on with WGN Plus. Combining two really good things usually results in something that's really, really good. And that's what Tom and Connor learned with Metal Movie Nights on their latest episode of NoCo Cinema. Mason Vera-Payne is opening up our closets and peeking into our Google search trends again, while John Cass of the Chicago Way has one of the most important aldermen on his radar. Look him up on WGN Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wendy Snyder, Bill's on vacation. I don't know who's in with Wendy, but Wendy's got somebody to hang out with her. That's coming up later this morning. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 o'clock. Hey, that was those were the stars of Back to the Future 3.
Yeah.
ZZ Top making a cameo in Back to the Future 3.
What was the name of the song they played?
It's Back
in Time?
No, Back in Time is Huey.
Yeah.
Back Track? Something?
Oh, I can think of it.
Yeah. But it's in the Old West. ZZ Top in the Old West, and they still spin their guitars.
Double back.
There it is. I love Back to the Future 3.
I think it's great.
Zemeckis made it only because he wanted to make a Western. He was like, I always wanted to make a Western, and he made a good one. Very entertaining movie. Airborne. That's from Real Genius, that line. It's one of my favorite lines in the movie. Airborne. Welcome back. It's Nick DiGilio here, and we're talking about old gadgets. If you still got some stuff laying around, or you have some memories of specifically 80s gadgets that really were the edge of technology, that's what we're talking about here. The Braun Micron Vario Universal. Braun, obviously, then it would be a shaver or a trimmer. This is from 1985. In an era where Tom Selleck mustaches and 5 o'clock shadows ruled, Only one machine could help mold such an appearance on the regular. That's Braun's electric shaver boasted an innovative slider button that flipped the beard trimmer 90 degrees for a precise facial cuts, a feature that has been duplicated by most of the company's major competitors. So this is actually something that did something a little bit more technologically advanced that actually is still around. All right. You guys want to jump in? Some old school 80s gadgets, 312-981-7200. Here's John on WGN. Hi, John.
Hi, Nick. Hi. I had a friend who had a Volkswagen that had a four-track player in it.
A four-track player?
It was a predecessor to an eight-track player, but he didn't seem to have any cartridges for it.
Yeah.
That stopped making them.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. If you got a four-track player, but they don't make four tracks, that's not going to be very helpful for anybody.
No. I worked at a radio station that Spike Odell worked at that had 1,000 cartridges with oldies on them.
Oh, sure.
And I was talking to the radio programmer one time, and he started erasing a bunch of oldies he didn't think anybody wanted to hear. And he erased The Letter by Joe Cocker, and erased Give Peace a Chance by the Plastic Ono Band.
Was this in Iowa?
Yeah, it was in Davenport.
Davenport, yeah, because I know that Spike, that's where Spike came from. That's where he started doing his stuff. That's
there was
hilarious.
Also an 80s item called the Cap Snappler from Popeil.
Uh-huh.
Remember that?
The Cap Snappler?
Yeah, you have a bottle of pop and you put this, like, cloth on it, and it would allow you to twist the cap off.
Yeah. I totally remember that. I didn't know it was called the Cap Snappler. I totally know what you're talking about. It's like that piece of cloth, or almost rubber, that you would put on top of and twist it.
It sounds practical. I mean, you could, if they were still making them, maybe.
Yeah. For the name alone, I'd buy it. You know, John?
Well, Popeil made some really neat products. Remember the Pocket Fisherman?
Sure, the Pocket Fisherman. I bought one for my dad.
Okay. And then Ron Coquille had an item that was like, if you were going bald, he had this like spray paint that you could spray on your bald spot.
Yeah, it was spray hair. It came in an aerosol can.
Spray hair. In fact, he did an infomercial.
Yep.
And he demonstrated, he said, I have this place in my head, and he pulled out this can, and he sprayed this, like, liquid hair on his head.
It was his only, Popeil had a bald spot on the back of his head, and he got the old aerosol can and sprayed it. It came in different colors, if I'm not mistaken, so that, you know, you could just spray that on your head and walk out with a lovely head of hair.
That was wild.
John, thanks so much, man.
Okay.
All right, take care. There you go. Some old school radio stuff too. Yeah, the hair, the spray on hair. Have you ever seen the Fabulous Baker Boys? Jeff Bridges, yeah. Beau Bridges, and Michelle Pfeiffer's.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite. I love that movie. Jeff Bridges is in. So right there, that's it gets great. An edge because he's my favorite actor of all time. There's a scene in the movie where before they go out, do you remember?
Hair in a can. Yeah.
Sprays it on the back of Beau Bridges' head.
You know, if I were ever going bald, I would probably turn to something like that.
Or just go to Urlacher Land or whatever the hell that. Those billboards are so weird.
I don't need that recycled G.I. Joe hair, okay?
It's just those. You know, here's the weird thing about those billboards. God bless him. He's happy. It works for him. You know what I mean? Him and Rhino. You see those billboards all over the city.
They're two guys of respect.
But yeah, but I never knew Urlacher had hair at all to begin with. So when he showed up with hair, I'm like, he looks weird.
He was just born. He was born that way.
But I just never knew because you never saw a period of time. There was never a time when you knew that he was balding. You know what I mean? Like he once had hair and it was bald. I just thought he always shaved his head and that was it. So you know what's funny is that when he got inducted into the Football Hall of Fame, on his statue, his bust, he's bald. Even though when they inducted him, because it was last year, I think, when he got inducted.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's there with hair at the induction ceremony, and his bronze bust or whatever it is that they give you when you go to the Hall of Fame, bald.
You got to go for when he was at peak playing ability.
Yeah, well, that was it. Well, he never had hair when he played anyway.
Exactly.
So 262 area code says pulse phones push button, but it still clicked each number like an old dial phone. Yeah, you would press the button and it would go like a rotary phone. You ever use a rotary phone in your life?
No.
You know what a rotary phone is.
I know what it is. I've seen it in the news reels.
Right. But yeah, so they thought, okay, it'll be so cool. The technology will be so great that it'll be a push button phone, but it'll still work as a rotary phone. It'll still work as a rotary phone. So you give your finger a rest. You don't have to turn your finger around on the dial. All you do is press the button, but it still goes. And it takes as long as a rotary phone.
Wow. Amazing.
But it was so cool, man. It was a push button. 708, an 80s gadget, my 1987 Fiero. Fiero, yeah, man. I got a reel-to-reel yet. Great sound reproduction. And that's Skycap Dan. Greg says, I still have an original 1984 Apple Macintosh with a little teeny screen. We have a Rubik's Cube, a waterproof sport cassette Walkman, a Discman, and many LPs.
Do you have a CD, bro?
224 area code says camcorder in 1983, two separate pieces. Camcorders, those were great. All right, how about the Nerf Blast-A-Ball? This was from 1989, the Nerf Blast-A-Ball. All it took was a plastic gun to open up our imagination during fictional gunfights. Then Nerf made things a little more physical with its push-and-pull ball blaster. The company cleverly packaged dual blasters for two people to engage in battle, firing ballistic balls from up to 40 feet away. Adolescents of the early 90s and late 80s were fortunate enough to have the toy with this monstrous successor, then which became the Nerf Bazooka. Or Ballzooka, sorry. The Nerf Ballzooka. You got to remember this. Oh, God, I remember this. And I'm not even a gamer. The Nintendo Power Glove. Have you ever seen the Nintendo Power Glove?
I've honestly tried to find one just to have it.
It's fantastic.
I've always wanted to have one of those.
Gaming critics will forever bitch about this, the inaccuracy and limited functionality of this. That won't ever change. But Nintendo's hand controller gains props for welcoming body motion controls to the home gaming console Spectrum. It was in the Power Glove's failure where the Big N learned at and excelled at the technology in the modern era when they did the Wii. And let's not forget the massive hold it had on pop culture market across the media platforms from fashion to film. It was in the movie The Wizard with Fred Savage?
Yeah.
Here's the other thing about the Power Glove. Let me explain something to you, Tom. Again, biased against left-handed people.
I mean,
it's a right-handed Power Glove. Nope. Yeah. Well, you're left-handed. Sorry, you can't play with the Power Glove because you're left-handed.
Yeah, you can't play with power.
Story of my life, man. Yeah, as a lefty, we suffer. Left-handed people suffer. We live in a right-handed world, man.
You do.
We live in a right-handed world. I had to learn how to cut with scissors with my right hand.
They make left-handed scissors now, though.
Yeah,
right?
They do, but they didn't have them in my public school when I was a kid.
Not so. In the 70s, man.
Yeah. Mary is on WGN. Hi, Mary.
Hi.
How
about the princess phone? Remember, every little girl had to have
had to have the princess phone.
Yep. And the other thing is, all the people that are left-handed are the only people who are in their right minds.
That's right. I absolutely agree with that, Mary. Thanks for the call.
Okay, bye.
See you, bye. Us lefties, man, we got to stick together.
You gotta.
I was persecuted by a teacher when I was a kid.
What'd she do?
Went up to the, I was first grade, six, seven years old. Something like that. Went to a public school. This is being like 1971. And the woman, the teacher, probably in her late 70s, early 80s. So she was born in the 1800s. That's if you think about it. She was born in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Okay. She tells everybody to go up to the blackboard and write something on the blackboard. We had to write something. I put the chalk in my left hand. I walk up. I start to write. She slaps my hand, takes the chalk, and puts it in my right hand. And I started writing again. I couldn't do it, so I put it back in my left hand. I started writing again. She slapped my hand again and said, no, and then put it in my right hand. So this woman, you know, who was very old in the early 70s, was still under the assumption that if you were left-handed, you were a spawn of Satan. Because that was the thing. It was like, you can't be left-handed. You know, I know stories of people whose parents would actually tie their left hand down.
Yeah.
So that they would have to learn to be right-handed. I can't tell you the number of stories because I talk about being left-handed on the show pretty regularly.
Sure.
But yeah, you know. And by the way, Adam Phillips, lefty.
Oh, easy.
Our engineer. Yeah, I always point out lefties.
You just.
I'm very annoying, man. Like seriously, I'm very annoying. Like I'd watch TV with like my wife or something, and somebody would be left-handed. I go lefty. I do it alone. I sit on my couch if I'm watching something. Somebody's left-handed. I go lefty. If we're at a restaurant and somebody comes up and their waiter or waitress comes up and they've got their, you know, they've got their pad and they write with their left hand, I go, oh, you're lefty. And they go, yes. But see, it's okay to say it to a left-handed person because we have an unspoken bond. Of us left-handed people, we
feel like
an unspoken
you had a statistic.
Bond.
Like, what was it, like 15% of the
population? Oh, it's low.
It's a ridiculously low amount of the population.
Well, the other weird thing is, I've talked about this before, the most left-handed friendly TV show in the history of TV, The Simpsons,
mm-hmm.
and not just Ned Flanders, and not just the Leftorium. Matt Groening is lefty.
Mm-hmm.
John Swartzwelder is lefty. A lot of the best writers and a lot people on the staff are lefties, and they throw a lot of lefties in The Simpsons. I think there's like a Wikipedia list of all the left-handed characters on The Simpsons, and I can't remember which one. Either Bart or Lisa are left-handed. I can't remember which one, but there are a lot of left-handed characters, and in addition to obviously Ned Flanders is the most popular lefty.
Well, yeah, the left.
You know, with the Leftorium and everything.
It's Bart.
Bart is lefty.
Bart's a lefty. Principal Skinner's a lefty.
Right.
Moe's a lefty. Marge is a lefty.
I love it. Marge is lefty?
According to this, yes.
Wow. Okay. I love it, man. I love that. But yeah, so my mom actually had to go to school, Tom. He had to go to school and talk to the principal and say, here's the deal. My son's left-handed. They were like, huh?
Yeah. Also, can you tell that teacher not to abuse
Yeah, can
the
you
kids,
tell the teacher?
Please?
But again, this was like the early 70s, and she was 80 years old, and she, you know, she thought it was okay to slap. Like in the 70s, you know, you get slapped around in school. I can't tell you the number of guys who went to like St. Pat's or a Patrick or a Catholic school, the number of times they got smacked around by brothers or nuns.
Yeah.
And that's not a lie, man. You ever see the movie Heaven Help Us?
Yep.
One of my favorite. I love that movie. That's I adore great. That movie. God, Kevin Dillon is hilarious in that movie.
It is very
Everybody's
good.
Funny. But, you know, the abusive brother in that movie.
It's very real.
My friends and I, who saw it, I'm Italian-Irish and not Catholic. I don't know have no idea how that happened. But anyway, I was with my Catholic friends, and we're watching the movie, and they were all like, oh, like every scene where they were being punished, where the guys were being punished in the Catholic school, or being smacked around by the brother, they were all like, yeah, that's a documentary, man.
It's for real.
Yeah.
You're lucky. You got all the food, none of the guilt.
Yeah, well, that was the thing. We'd go out, you know, like my friends and I, you know, we would go out to eat at an IHOP or something, or back in the day, Wags. You know, Wags was a restaurant, like a very like a Denny's kind of restaurant.
Okay, yeah.
But it was Walgreens. It was a Walgreens associated restaurant. The logo with the W, Wags, that was an offshoot of Walgreens. Walgreens went into the diner business for a while. There was a Wags at Six Corners right by the Portage Theater. Right on Milwaukee, which is a mini mall now. So anyway, we would go like during Lent on a Friday or something, and everybody would be like ordering eggs, or they would order something, you know, like that. And I'd be like, just bring me meat. I don't care. Meat. What do you have to drink? Meat juice. Just, you know, just to rub it in on my Catholic friend's
Can
side.
I get a pint of bacon grease,
just to give me a, just put a slab of beef in front of me and give me some gravy, and I'll drink that. So, all right. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we got more here. We're talking about gadgets, and I'll tell you about the Logitech C7 mouse. The Logitech C7 mouse. Gadgets from the 80s and old time. 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here until 5 a.m. I am here till 5, and Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5, Steve Cochran at 6. That's all coming up. Stay tuned. We are talking about some gadgets from the 80s and old school tech. If you want to jump in with any of your memories or you still have some of that old stuff, call us at 312-981-7200, 312. 981-7200. You can text us as well with your thoughts. 312-981-7200. So there you go. By the way, somebody texted in and wanted to know what website this is from. It's from complex.com. C-O-M-P-L-E-X. Complex.com. But like I said, we conveniently have it linked up on our Facebook page. So all you got to do is go to facebook.com/Nick D Show. Like us. It's right there. Click onto it. You can read the whole thing. It's at complex.com, but again, I encourage you to like us on Facebook, and it's at facebook.com/Nick D Show, and you can read about it right now. Let's see. Here's Lulu on WGN. Hello, Lulu.
Hey, Nick. How are you?
All right.
Listen, I do everything you said that you do about lefties. I'm left-handed.
Yeah.
But last December, I lost the use of my left hand, and it's really a drag.
Yeah, I bet.
It's coming back a little bit, and I'm finding myself picking up utensils. The food doesn't get to my mouth, but that'll come next. And pens and stuff, and trying to write.
Yeah.
But it's very weird because learning, you know, now I have to learn how to write with my right hand. And I'm old. I'm older than you.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's difficult even if you're, you know, like at no matter what age, trying to do things with your right hand when you're naturally left-handed. That's terrible.
Well, so. And also, when I used to get left-handed, like a left-handed can opener.
Sure.
And I was so used to using a right-handed can opener.
Yeah.
It took me a while to learn how to use it.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird?
It is weird. Well, good luck. Good luck, Lulu. I hope everything works out for you.
It's coming back. I'll send you something in writing when it's good.
Okay. Sounds good, Lulu. Take care.
Okay.
All right, bye.
Bye.
All right. The Logitech C7 mouse. This is from 1985. Tech experts attribute Logitech's first mouse as the product to break the accessories marker into the home personal computer market after becoming its biggest selling device at the time and establishing a revenue stream that helped the company go public. Who was to argue? The C7 also boasted a number of novelties, the most valuable being its ability to draw power from a PC without the need of an external power supply. And Logitech has come a long way. It is one of the most basic looking, weird looking mouses I've ever seen. How about the Fisher-Price PXL 2000? This is from 1987. We'd like to look at Fisher-Price's lo-fi plastic camera as the talk boy of its day. Expectations were low for a $100 video recorder restricted to capturing 100 lines of resolution at 15 frames per second. Most parents actually walked into Toys R Us chuckling at its specs, but even the mediocre video quality, the PXL 2000 sold young children on the perception that they too could become a filmmaker in their own right. One could only imagine what world star moments could have been captured through the lens of this recorder. It looks very 80s futuristic, if you know what I mean. So that's the Fisher-Price PXL 2000, little video camera for children. Oh, man. All right, let's see. Here's Scott on WGN. Hi, Scott.
Hi, how you doing, Nick?
All right, what's up?
Hey, I've been listening to you for a long time, my
man. Thank you. I appreciate that.
I have a I don't know if you ever heard of Radica games, the handheld games?
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got one here from 1989, and it still works. I play it every now and then, and it's got a neat sound to it. You know, it's, I don't know if you can hear it.
Yeah, go ahead.
And it's a five, you know, you can play one from one line to five lines.
Yeah. Now, the thing still works. Is it battery operated?
Yes, it is. Yeah, it runs on two AA's. It's Radica. You know, I don't know if Radica is still around or not.
Yeah. That's great. Let me hear it one more time.
Oh, okay. Here.
Yeah.
You want five line?
We'll sure, let's five do line. Five line, yeah.
Let's see if I get 5,000 out
of it. All right, let's see. Nice. Let's do. No, you didn't do it. That's it.
No, I only got 20 points.
Okay. Yeah. All right, Scott. Okay, I got to run.
Okay.
Thanks, well, Scott.
Already.
Take care, buddy. You hear that futuristic sound, man? That's the sound of the future right there.
That's the sound of the 80s.
Oh, that's fantastic. If anybody else has any old toys that they want to, you know, or gadgets that make sounds from the old days, I would love to hear that. Like, another thing that Tom, whenever we talk about rotary phones, I always ask anybody if they've got a rotary phone to call up and prove it. So when they get on the line, I have them dial so that we can hear the, because that's the way to prove that you still got a rotary phone.
I think we did that with payphones once on Dean's show, and someone called in from
a payphone.
Yeah, from a payphone at like an old L stop.
Yeah, don't see those anymore. Okay, let's break here for the news, and we'll come back. We got some old school gadgets, lots of texts coming in, 80s gadgets and more. 312-981-7200. The news is up after this.
Is long with a many winding tongue that leads us to who knows where, who knows where.
Welcome back, everybody. By the way, I didn't ask who requested the Hollies.
That's coming to us from Dave in Monroe.
Dave in Monroe requesting the Hollies on Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. We will hear another Holly song to wrap up that Triple Play Thursday. Hey, if you want to jump in here, phone lines are open, text lines are going, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're talking about some 80s gadgets, some old school gadgets that we still might have laying around, and some memories about some of these things. Like, for instance, this one, I believe, was kind of ahead of its time. I'm looking at it visually. The Atari Touch Tablet. This is from 1984. Apple might take credit for bringing forth the tablet revolution with the iPad. Well, Atari's electronic slate could arguably serve as a precursor to that movement. It looks exactly, I mean, it looks like a tablet that we have now. The Touch Tablet lets users doodle, draw, paint, erase, and drop and drag images through the use of a digital pen and Atari's Artist software. While inferior to modern technology standards, it was an impressive piece of hardware that never took off during the company's twilight years. This was in 1984. The Atari Touch Tablet. It's amazing. This actually looks like something that was completely, you know, like the stuff that the tablets that we see nowadays look like it was completely inspired by this thing. How about this? Some texts coming in. 815 area code says, I've got a 1060S 8mm camera. No batteries, no electricity. You wind it up. Recording time was about 30 seconds before you had to rewind. Greg from NB says, yeah, I forgot I also have a Betamax video cassette machine. Wow, still got the Betamax. Hanging on to the Betamax, man. All right. Let's see. The Sega Master System home games were on a card rather than a cartridge, and the 3D glasses were way ahead of its time, says 404 area code. 224 area code says Teddy Ruxpin. Do you remember Teddy Ruxpin? You don't know Teddy Ruxpin?
I do know Teddy Ruxpin. I know of Teddy Ruxpin.
Yeah. It's a creepy little doll that would, you know, you would put a cassette in it, and it would talk, and it would move its eyes and stuff. I'm Teddy Ruxpin. I'm your friend.
I don't like that.
Well, how about the Furby?
I had a Furby. I didn't like that either.
You had a Furby?
Oh, yeah, I had a Furby. It was the 90s. Everybody had a Furby.
The Furbies would, like, learn a different language, and they would be on and make noise and stuff. And then, like, in the middle of the night, they would come on and start talking and stuff, so you'd be asleep, and some of the Furby would, like, make noise.
It was like living with gremlins, essentially.
Yeah. Well, they looked like a gremlin.
Yeah.
And then nowadays we have the lovely, you know, Alexas. And, you know, when you say Alexa on the radio, I bet somebody right now, the thing that just went on, the Amazon thing just went on. But do you remember the report a few months back, some months back, about Alexa laughing in the middle of the night?
Yeah.
Like for no reason? All of a sudden you hear, And I'm like, I wouldn't have one of those things in my house.
And that's why they made the new Child's Play.
Yeah, that's the new Child's Play. But yeah, it's like people were reporting that Alexa was laughing for no reason. Like suddenly, like 3 o'clock in the morning, you hear.
Yeah, if you think it's creepy when I do it, imagine a robot doing it.
Now, that's what I'm saying. Some creepy stuff, man. How about the Koss Porta Pro headphones? These things look real futuristic, and also, it looks to me like they have a really, really short cord. So, don't get too far from the stereo. This was from 1984. Talk about a pair of underrated headphones that continue to stand the test of time. These over-ears promoted one of the most comforting listening experiences thanks to the lightweight design accompanied by Koss's signature comfort zone setting, three mechanical settings to adjust the tension of the earpiece against your dome. It's inconceivable to think that such a great-sounding pair of headphones came priced lower than $100, but in fact, the Porta Pros became such a popular option throughout the past two decades that Koss re-released it as part of its special 25th anniversary edition bundle in 2009, and how's that for longevity? Wow, so people are really enjoying them. Very cool.
Yeah, they're very good. They're nice, very comfortable headphones.
Okay.
Yeah, you can still get them.
How about the Pocket Vision 3? The realistic Pocket Vision 3 from 1985. Portable televisions were big in the mid-80s, and anyone who walked into Radio Shack might remember stumbling upon the Pocket Vision 3. A favorite amongst overnight security guards and Fortune 500 travelers, a 3-inch miniature TV utilized a bizarre projection system that consisted of natural light coming through the white plastic panel to reflect a reversed image into a mirror. It's extremely technical. Nonetheless, the device produced an impressive black and white visual and viewing angles and offered about 10 hours of playback through four AAA batteries. Anybody buy AAA? Do anybody need AAA batteries anymore?
Yeah, I have to use them in my Roku remote.
In your Roku remote? Oh, yeah, remotes carry that. Yeah, sure.
That's pretty much all I can think of. Anything else has got to be at least a double A.
Sure. 309 area code says pagers and beepers. Remember when everybody had pagers and beepers?
Pagers are dumb.
Yeah, well, you got into trouble the last time you talked about
that. I did, and I don't care because I don't like them.
Okay. Well, there was a time period like in the 80s, like if you had a pager, you were a drug dealer.
Man, my dad must have been slinging coke left and
because
right.
Because that's what, you know, like you would page your dealer.
Oh, yeah.
Get to a phone and then meet up someplace to buy your dope. 773 area code. Marco South Deering. My it's Marco. My 1982 Pac-Man arcade game. Still had the 1982 Pac-Man arcade game. 815 area code. How about any device made by Ronco? We were talking about them earlier. Whose commercials played endlessly on Channel 32? You're not kidding. All the time. You watch Benny Hill, you're going to see some Ronco commercials. You watch The Honeymooners, you're going to see some Ronco commercials. A little MASH for you, enjoy some Ronco commercials. How about Make Me Laugh with Bobby Van? Watch that show, you're going to get some Ronco commercials. For things like the record cleaner, which removed dirt and fingerprints from your LPs. Yeah, you had that record cleaner thing. That was big in the 70s. All right, how about Mr. Frosty Slushy Master? Mr. Frosty Slush Master from 1980. This looks like a colorful little item toy. From Play School, it looks like. From 1980, when the girls were busy cooking up sweets with their Easy Bake oven dual temp ovens, the fellows fed their icy addictions, courtesy of Mr. Frosty. The contraption was just a simple ice-crushing machine that plopped out slush and let you drench it in flavor-heavy syrups. There was no substitute for this, but it did the trick for sugar rushes. No wonder kids were so freaking hyper back then. Mr. Frosty, it looks like a snowman with a blue little cap on and a scarf, and you just put some ice in and he smashes it. That's pretty much all it was. How about the Braun ET66 calculator? From 1987, accountants and stockbrokers were practically naked without their bronze number cruncher stashed in their business suits. A minimalist and functional design, along with its multicolored keypad, made the ET66 one of the decade's biggest surprises and most imitated creations ever assembled. Open up the calculator app on your iPhone and see it for yourself. Yeah. It was always good to have a calculator because you could turn the calculator upside down and spell the word boobs. You ever do that, Tom?
Yeah.
Of course you have. Or hello.
Well, we used to get in trouble because once we got into graphing calculators, a lot of those, the Texas Instruments ones, you could load games onto them. So instead of doing math equations, you could play Tetris.
On a calculator?
Yeah, it was awesome. Because these were graphing calculators. They're really complicated. They're computers, you know?
I don't even know what that means.
You could solve, like, graphing, essentially, like, parabolas and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, you're speaking another language.
Yeah.
By the way, there's a handheld calculator right by you.
Oh, yeah?
Can you see it? It's right by it's right where the folder for Studio D is. It should be on the desk. You see it? There it is. There's a handheld calculator right outside of Studio B or Studio D where I am, the producer booth where Tom is. Spell boobs, Tom. That's the first thing you do when you get a calculator.
Unfortunately, this one doesn't appear to work.
Oh, it doesn't work.
You just got a broken calculator in here, for God knows why.
Do we have like a watch battery that we can put into it or something? Or does it take AAA?
I'm going to have to take the whole back off this thing. This is, I don't know.
I have no idea why there's a handheld calculator in that room. I don't know who it belongs to. It's been sitting there for like a couple of months at least.
You know. Oh, no, there she goes.
Oh, it works?
Yeah, hold on. 8-0-0-8-5.
See, boobs. Now it says boobs. 8-0-0-8-5.
Oh, man.
Turn it upside down. Spells boobs.
Station of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. And I won Personality of the Year, too. That's why, because we spell boobs on the air. That's why we win. That's why I have a Walk of Fame plaque across the river. That's exactly why, because I tell people how to spell boobs with their calculator. I'm providing very important information. All right. Everybody hang on, 312-981-7200. Having a lot of fun talking about the old school gadgets, especially from the 80s. If you have any laying around, if you want to talk about memories of them, the phone lines and the text lines are open at 312-981-7200. But first, let's take a break so that I can give you some weather. It's just going to be hot and miserable for the next 14 months.
Sandy, the aurora is rising behind us. Those pier lights are carnival life.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio. We're here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich has the opening bell at 5 and come up at 6 o'clock. Steve Cochran with your morning drive, and I'll be hanging out with the gang. I love everybody on the Steve Cochran Show. About 6:20, we'll do like my weekly Thursday visit, talking about previewing the movies for the weekend and talking about entertainment and all kinds of fun stuff. Also coming up, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn in the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. All right, we're having some fun here talking about some gadgets from the 80s and some old-school technology. If you have some of that stuff laying around and you want to talk about it, or if you have memories about some of these gadgets and some of the high-tech devices from the past that were so awesome, give us a call or a text at 312-981-7200. Here's Brian on WGN.
Hey,
Brian.
Hold on. Hey, hello.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
All right, what's up?
I'm good. Did you ever, I was sitting out in my yard at the bench with a friend of mine a couple of summers ago, right? We barbecued, had a couple cold ones, and for some reason we got to talking about Alexa and Siri from two different computer companies, right?
Yes.
And I blurted out, you know, I wonder if they go to war with each other on the computers, you know what I mean? And sure enough, we looked it up and we got it on a smartphone, and it was hilarious.
So you made Siri and Alexa talk to one another. I bet that's been done. I bet there are videos online with that, right?
Yeah,
where people have had to have done that, right?
Yeah, because probably like Brian, you know, just get curious.
Yeah,
and they talk to each other.
Yeah,
two different intelligences.
I bet they can communicate, right?
Yeah.
This is why this technology is so great, so we can screw around with it.
Exactly.
It's like, oh, this is a really amazing technology. I wonder if they can talk to each other. That's how we're going to use it. all right, Brian, thanks for the call, man. 312-981-7200. Have a great morning, Brian. Here is Carl on WGN. Hi, Carl.
Hey, Nick. Good show.
Thank you.
You know, I forgot I had it. I still have it. It's a Sega with the game Night Trap.
Night Trap?
With Dana Plato.
Dana Plato?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the object of Night Trap?
There were vampires in this house, and all the teenagers go into this house, and the vampires start creeping out of closets and stuff like that, and grabbing these teenagers, turning them upside down, and draining their blood out.
Jeez.
And you have to try to save them before they grab them and turn them upside down and drain their blood out.
Good Lord!
And the game was so violent, it was banned. And I always thought to myself, I got to keep this thing. This thing might be worth money in the future.
Yeah.
And I never saved them. Never, ever, ever saved them. And I finally just gave up on the darn thing. And I'm a decent gamer. And I thought, I can't get the knack of this thing. But they're screaming and screaming, help, help, help us, help us. And bang, then they're all dead and you got to start over again.
That is hilarious.
Pretty creepy, I'll have to say. I can understand why they banned it. It was pretty rough, especially for kids.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, Carl. Thanks, man.
Take care.
Hey, can you look up Night Trap?
Oh man,
on the intranets. Do you know this game?
Oh, I know about Night Trap. It's notorious.
Is it really?
Yeah. This is in the era of like Mortal Kombat when that first came out. When all of a sudden parents were like, "What? What are they doing on the Nintendo?" Night Trap is notorious for resulting in the creation of like video game ratings. You know, self-regulation.
I've never even heard of it. Well, I mean, it was a Sega game?
Yeah, it was for the Sega Genesis, I want to say.
Okay.
And it's not so much, it's a game, but it's more like an interactive movie.
Okay.
So there's literally like full motion video happening in front of
and
you.
And Dana Plato's in it.
Yes. She's in it.
From Different Strokes. Dana Plato from Different Strokes.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll see if I could find the it had to be edited, you know. Let's make sure I'm going to make sure we're not playing anything too crazy.
What is it? Did they have like R-rated language and stuff?
You know, I don't remember the language. It was just more of the violence and the scantily clad teenagers.
This sounds unbelievable.
I'll just send you this. There's a YouTube link with it's the 25th anniversary like restored video that would play that you would interact.
How is it that I've never heard of this Night Trap?
Well, you're not a gamer, you know.
Yeah.
It's really video game history, but
Wow, and this guy still has Night Trap.
I know. That's probably worth a decent amount of money. I'm not going to lie to you.
It probably is. I mean, considering now what I'm learning about sort of how legendary this game is. Never heard about it before, ever. That's insane with Dana Plato. 815 area code, Mr. Microphone. Oh, hey, find the Mr. Microphone.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
There it is.
I've been holding on to that for 2 hours because I knew this was going to be brought up.
One more time. Here, let's hear it again.
Radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
Yeah.
We got to get that added to the soundboard.
Mr. Microphone, man. It's amazing to me that that thing sold. And it was popular for some years. And that commercial was everywhere. Hey, you're going to be on the radio. No, we're not on the radio. I'm not on the radio. I'm on the radio. You're not.
And they're all singing Christmas tunes.
Yeah. Well, that might have been the Christmas, like, you know, like the push for Christmas to buy it as a present. So I think that was probably the Christmas TV ad campaign to encourage people to buy their friends Mr. Microphone so that they could pick up chicks and cars.
Radio.
Hey, good looking. We'll be back to pick you up later.
And she's smiling, but she's smiling like, oh, like that's going to work. Like that technique works.
I guess the 80s were a different time,
let's
man.
Let's drive past a chick and yell into a microphone and say, hey, good looking, we'll be back to pick you up later, and then watch her throw eggnog at you because it's Christmas time.
In California because it's just no snow on the ground.
Yeah. How about this? 815 area code says, how about Speak and Spell? Wally Phillips would do it on his show and award an Amling's Bowl of Beauty along with Edna Mae Lewis scarf. Yeah. Or the tape cassette adapter that you would play CDs in your car. Oh, that's right. If it went over a bump, it would wreck everything.
I had a British Speak and Spell.
Yeah, a British accent?
Yeah, and instead of Z, it said Z.
Oh, it said Z. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's continue with this not craziness about gadgets and all kinds of fun, you know, technology that is no longer even good. But you want to see someone who puts a Speak and Spell to great use? Did you ever see the appearance? It's on YouTube and it's legendary. The appearance of Albert Brooks on the Tonight Show with Johnny Carson when he brings out his ventriloquist act dummy or buddy.
No, I've not. God.
Yeah, you should Google Albert Brooks buddy Carson. And it's him doing a ventriloquist act. He turned the Speak and Spell around. He put googly eyes on it and legs and hands, and he asks it questions. And every question that he asks is he presses a letter, and that's the answer to the question. Just hold on to it. Let's play. We'll play it on the air because it's really funny. All right, the news is up next.
Warm yourself by the fire, son, and the morning will come soon. I'll tell you stories of a better time. In a place that we once knew.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline Studio, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago here on a Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday! Excuse me. Who requested that?
That's coming to us from Jerry in Kansas. It's Chicago's very own Rise Against.
Rise Against. All right, there you go. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. We've been talking about some goofy gadgets and electronic devices and high-tech stuff that came out in the 80s. If you got some of that old technology and you got some memories about it, give us a call here at 312-981-7200. Before we get back to, I want to hear the Speak and Spell. We were talking about the Speak and Spell, and I'll set the whole thing up in a minute. Some celebrity birthdays today. I was scrolling around on IMDb. J.J. Abrams' birthday today.
Have a lens flare on us, man.
He's 53 years old, J.J. Abrams.
Wait, he's 53?
Yeah.
Well, I mean.
Yeah. I mean.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
He just, he doesn't look 53.
No, he doesn't look 53.
I'm
53.
Jeez.
He's a year younger than me because I turned 54 in like a week or so.
Mm-hmm.
But J.J. Abrams, and I just would like to thank him for Felicity.
Yeah.
That's what I want to thank him
for. Alias?
Alias?
Not so much.
You know how Alias came to be, right?
Yeah.
I told you the story. Yeah, right? Kerry Russell drunk at a party and came up to J.J. Abrams and said, hey, wouldn't it be really funny if we found out that Felicity was a spy?
Alias
was born. speaking of the CW or the WB, Ed Westwick, 32 years old today.
Oh, I'm Chuck Bass.
Chuck Bass. Yeah. I used to get that I looked like Ed Westwick.
I could see that.
Yeah. And then Tobey Maguire, 44.
Nice. The real Peter Parker. If you ask me. Seriously. I mean, Tom Holland's great, but nah, man. Tobey. Tugboat.
The second Spider-Man movie was my favorite comic book movie of all time until Logan came out. Mm-hmm. And now Logan's my favorite comic book movie of all time.
Well, if you're going to get beat, I think Spider-Man 2 is happy to get beat by Logan, because Logan's amazing.
Logan is unbelievable. And I guess one of the reasons, because I like comic book movies. I don't go completely nuts over them. I think Spider-Man 2 is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
But Logan doesn't feel like a comic book movie.
No.
It's
James Mangold.
And it plays more like a Western.
Yeah.
It's also about aging.
Yeah.
You know,
death.
It's all that stuff. And it's I cried like a baby after the first time I saw Logan.
I was just impressed. They pulled it off.
And I'll tell you something, man. The little girl, I can't remember her name. I feel like a jerk because I don't remember her name. She was amazing. But I'm telling you, man, Hugh Jackman and Patrick Stewart should have been nominated for Oscars for that movie.
Yeah.
They are both unbelievable in that movie. But yeah, Logan. Huh. Love it. All right. Well, there you go. Some celebrity birthdays for you. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Let's see. We were talking about gadgets and stuff like that, and you know, from the 80s and old school stuff. If you have any memories of what used to be high tech. How about this? The Tomy Omnibot.
Oh, man.
It looks like a little R2-D2, but with big, like a kind of a clear dome from the top and two big red eyes.
Yeah.
And it's from the company Tomy.
It's a very important plot point in the It's a Very Sunny Christmas special.
Oh, yeah.
They're going after the Omnibot.
The Omnibot. That's right. The year was 1980. The motorized android managed a variety of functions, like the ability to carry light objects, rummage across the carpet, play cassette tapes, and talk in robotic fashion through a remote microphone. A digital clock with timers and alarms to schedule recordings were also found on the toy, designing it for the perfect espionage and blackmail device to use against bully siblings. The Tomy Omnibot from 1980. Anybody had these things? Oh, how about this? ColecoVision expansion module number one. ColecoVision. I remember ColecoVision. Buddy of mine, when I was working at McDonald's, back in like 1981 or something, it was like one of the guys that worked there invited a bunch of people over to play ColecoVision. And everybody was like, ooh, we're going over to Jim's, man. We're going to play ColecoVision. And the ColecoVision game of choice for this particular set of guys who worked at McDonald's together was the ColecoVision hockey game. Because we're all like ridiculous hockey. I've been a hockey fan my whole life. It's my favorite. It's my favorite sport. And so, you know, when this Coleco, because there was an Atari hockey game, but it was like, you know, at that point the graphics. If you've seen Atari graphics,
yeah, they're kind of dinky.
This is terrible too. Like the graphics now, but it was like night and day compared to Atari.
So we're actually there, man.
We're all excited. You know, we work a little bit at McDonald's and we go over and we play some hockey. We play like 4 hours of hockey on ColecoVision over at Jim's house. 1982 is when that came out. The expansion module number one. Even with top-notch graphics, the ColecoVision struggled to compete with the Atari 2600 because of its lack of titles. Then came the add-on that saved the console. It's the expansion module number one, which offered access to the entire Atari 2600 library and gave the machine the largest library of games on the market. And on top of that, it also had control ports to plug in the original Atari joysticks. Atari might have lost its several battles to sue Coleco, but gamers became the true victors with both companies. So that's a little bold move right there.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Making an item where you're going to steal the competitor's games? Yeah.
I don't know how that would not fly today.
Oh,
you couldn't do that.
Absolutely not.
There's copy. I can't believe that didn't infringe on some sort of copyright.
Well, they it said here in the piece that they tried to sue and they failed.
Yeah.
So
that's shocking.
So we were talking about the Speak and Spell, which is a classic game, you know, that people played in the 70s and the 80s. You would press it and you would spell out words, and the little computerized voice would say the name of the letter, would say the letter, and then would complete the word. Well, Albert Brooks, who is a genius, one of my favorite comedic artists ever, and one of the greatest comedic filmmakers that's ever lived. If you've not seen Lost in America, Real Life, Modern Romance, Defending Your Life, those four movies in particular are masterpieces. I also liked Mother, and he also directed The Muse. Oh, and also Looking for Comedy in the Muslim World, which is a genius movie. Anyway, he started out doing stand-up, and he was one of Johnny Carson's favorite guests. And he came on one night to do a ventriloquism act with a thing he called Buddy. That was his little buddy. What he did was he turned a speak and spell around. He put googly eyes and a face on it, put some legs and hands. And then so he would do a routine with him, and he would press the back of Buddy's head, which would be the keyboard of the speak and spell. And this is him on the couch with Johnny. I want to say back in the early 80s.
Buddy just got back from Mexico. Did you have a good time, Buddy?
Si.
All right. You like Mexico, huh? Uh-huh. Gonna stay there for a while? I see. If you could say sigh, we could have a bit. All right.
What's your sister's name?
Sue. All right. Buddy, would you like to meet Johnny Carson?
Why?
Because he's sitting right here, and he's a very important man, Buddy. Okay, right. Want to meet him, Buddy? All right, say hello to Johnny. Say hi, Buddy. Say hi to Johnny. All right. I have to tell you something. Buddy's very nervous, Johnny. He didn't want to be... But he's calling me now, Al. I'm talking, Buddy. He was very nervous. Buddy, I'm talking. He didn't want to be here, Johnny. I had to... Buddy, don't be rude. Buddy, what is it, Buddy?
I-E-E.
Oh, Buddy.
I-P-P. Albert Brooks, genius. See, that's the use of good technology right there. Take your speak and spell and do a fantastic, hilarious bit. You were in Mexico, see? Would you like to meet Johnny? Why? Oh, man. Great. All right, we're talking about sort of ancient technology and old gadgets from the 80s, and we've got some more here. I've got the Epson ET10 Pocket TV. We'll talk about that next. We want to hear from you. If you guys have any of those old gadgets or you got memories of them, talk or text us right now at 312-981-7200. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio, and we're here until 5 a.m. It is Thursday morning, Triple Play Thursday. Give me Triple Play Thursday! It's one artist, three songs, 312-981-7200. All right, we've been going back and having some fun here, remembering and talking about some 80s electronic gadgets, stuff that was high-tech and futuristic back then. And if you still have any of that stuff or you remember some of the old advances in technology and some of the old items, we would love to hear from you via talk or text. It's 312-981-7200. The Epson ET10 Pocket TV. Yeah, those pocket TVs were popular in the 80s. 1984, most of us know Epson for its computer printer heritage and recent line of phenomenal screen projectors. So those who were heavy on portable electronics in the 80s might remember the company's line of pocket televisions, primarily the ET10, the first liquid crystal pocket color TV, produced 57,600 pixels and flexed an RGB color filter to render a wider range of colors. Knight Rider never looked so good on a 2-inch screen. let's see. How about the Tamiya Grasshopper RC car? The Tamiya Grasshopper RC car looks like a fun car, like a toy car. Looks pretty cool. I would have played with it when I was a kid.
I never really got into toy cars.
Oh, man.
I mean, I liked Hot Wheels, but when I got to the... Because, you know, you push that yourself where you got the motor thing. They're manageable.
Yeah.
But the RC cars, those scared me.
Wow. All right.
People used to chase me with them.
Well, geez. The year was 1984. Tonka trucks became so yesteryear once this electronic buggy speeded its way onto your front porch. Solidly constructed and moderately fast, the battery-operated Grasshopper attracted males of all ages and remains an all-time classic on the RC competitive circuit throughout the past three decades. So it's a classic RC car. That's remote control, not Royal Crown Cola.
If it were, I'd like it more.
I know you would. The Acorn BBC Micro Model B. This just looks kind of like just a keyboard of some kind. In 1981, Acorn's console is regarded as the greatest home computer in the UK, though its existence was MIA in the States. Still, the machine was known as the Beep, sported a unique design layout and features unprecedented in PCs at the time, including an analog joystick port. It had a bus connection and an overwhelming number of connections hidden under the machine to accommodate design space. Its most popular attribute, the Torch floppy disk drive with the Z80 CPU, made the BBC Micro compatible with CPM software and expanded the UI capabilities. It doesn't look like it's capable of doing anything. I'm looking at the picture of it right now.
Just a piece of junk.
Yeah. How about this? Androbot Topo. Androbot Topo. This is from 1983. To me, it's a robot, obviously, and I guess it kind of resembles it's supposed to be like, if you all dreamed of having a personal robot like Rosie from the Jetsons handle our personal chores, the Androbot Topo was the closest thing to fulfilling our lifestyle fantasies. To me, it looks like a coffee maker.
It does.
Doesn't it look like a coffee maker?
That looks like a Mr. Coffee.
The real-life Android was controlled by a joystick and programmed through the Apple II interface, sporting two drive wheels and standing at least 36 inches tall. Targeted towards the consumer and education markets, the Topo failed to take the industry by storm, but has played a significant role in the independent of robot productivity software, like the iRobot. Yet another bad Will Smith movie. How about this? The Lego brick separator. Oh, this might come in handy.
That is very useful.
I bet this came in handy. Look at this thing. Ever tried prying Legos apart without one of these? It's ridiculously frustrating. The eternal struggle came to an end when the toy manufacturer spared us the trouble of flinging our creations against the wall to separate the plastic blocks. Yeah, that thing looks the old Lego brick separator. I never had one of those when I was a kid.
Well, I mean, and Legos are notoriously tough made. They have a...
Well, sure.
I mean, they have a...
That's why they hurt so much when you step on them.
You know how much force it takes to break a Lego brick?
No.
4,240 newtons, or the equivalent of 950 pounds.
See, that's why it hurts so much when you step on them.
Yeah. Basically indestructible.
Yeah. Okay. How about the Roland TR-808? Oh, it's a drum machine from Roland.
Legendary drum machine.
I remember this. Yeah, a buddy of mine had one. Joe, he had one.
Because he was a badass. That's why.
1980, drum machines didn't come back then. Didn't compete cheap back then. The 808 was one of the few affordable options that offered professional features, and helped an aspiring hip-hop artist create demos. Some of the decade's greatest records were recorded on a thing called Africa Pambaataa's Planet Rock. Upon being discontinued, the TR-808 became regular at pawn shops where broke producers purchased used models and started crafting beats. Its signature bass drum was the output for Kanye's 808s and Heartbreaks LP. So there you go. The 808, classic drum machine. All right, let's take a break here. We got the news coming up. We'll do a few more of these, and I'll do a quick Big Brother. We'll do a little Big Brother talk, too, to close out the show. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're live in the Allstate Skyline studio here till 5 a.m. Every weekday morning, 1 to 5 a.m. I'm your overnight dude. Steve Grzanich comes up after this with the opening bell at 5. 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Yeah, man, Triple Play Thursday. Wrapping up here. And, yeah. So we've been talking about some gadgets from the 80s and some electronic devices and high-tech, quote-unquote, stuff from the past. If you got any of that stuff or you have some memories, we've been describing some of these crazy things. Complex.com put together a big, huge article about 80 gadgets from the 80s with beautiful pictures and great descriptions of them. We have a link on our Facebook page if you'd like to read the article. It's facebook.com/NickDShow. We've only scratched the surface here. There's so many fun gadgets that were included in this article. Didn't have time to get to all of them, obviously. But if you want to read this article, it's at complex.com, but it's easily accessible right on our Facebook page, which is why you should like our Facebook page and get there now at facebook.com/NickDShow. A couple of texts have come in, and we want to read more and hear more from you at 312-981-7200. 301 area code says, we once had this ice cream maker. You put in the ingredients, and you had to crank it for what seemed like forever, and then you get a sliver of ice cream. That sounds about right. 815 area code says, I have a Where's the Beef board game from the 80s. Good Lord.
Like the Wendy's commercial?
Yeah.
I wonder how you turn that into a board game.
I don't know.
Just got to find the beef.
Clara Peller was everywhere in 1984. Everywhere. There were, you know, they did a whole bunch, a whole line of commercials. She was on talk shows, and all she was a, Where's the Beef? That was the whole thing. It became a catchphrase. There were T-shirts, hats, everything. It was used in political campaigns in 1984. Yeah, so I'm not surprised it turned into a board game at all. I mean, there was Where's the Beef stuff everywhere. I mean, if you weren't around, you know, it was completely insane. Clara Peller was in a movie. They put her in a movie, a terrible movie called Moving Violations. Moving Violations, which was a wacky comedy. Like, at that time, like the Police Academy movies were popular. So misfit goofballs in one place was kind of a subgenre to the R-rated comedy.
Right.
And so Moving Violations was about a bunch of people who had to go to driving school because they got their licenses revoked because they can't drive. So I'm trying to remember who else is in it, but one of the Murray brothers is in it. I want to say it's John. John Murray. Look it up for a second. They look up Moving Violations on the old IMDb. That's bringing back some memories. But yeah, I think it was John Murray. I'm trying to remember who wrote it and what were the credits. Do they have writing credits and directing credit on it?
Yeah, I'm going to head over to IMDb here. Let's see.
Moving Violations.
Neil Israel.
Oh, Neil Israel. Well, yeah. Okay, Neil Israel, one of the masterminds behind the Police Academy series.
Yeah, so you've got John Murphy, Jennifer Tilly.
No, John Murray.
John Murray.
Jennifer Tilly,
James Keach.
God, I forgot James Keach was in it.
Brian Backer.
Yeah.
Ned Eisenberg.
Uh-huh.
And then, of course, Clara Peller.
Clara Peller. Does she have a character name?
Yeah, Emma Jean.
Emma Jean. Okay. Anyway, she was in that movie, and I, if I remember correctly, she was not allowed to say "Where's the beef" in the movie because I think it was copyrighted. You know, I think Wendy's had, you know, like possession of the phrase "Where's the beef,"
yeah,
so she couldn't use
that
it in the movie. So why the hell would you put Clara Peller in a movie? Why would you cast Clara Peller in a movie and she can't say "Where's the beef"? Because that's the only thing that woman was known for. She was not known for her range as an actress.
Fred Willard's in it, too.
Fred Willard. God, why is Fred Willard in Moving Violations? It is such a terrible movie. I remember we saw it, my friends and I saw it at the drive-in. Now, even at the drive-in, it wasn't fun. So, yeah. Hey, I got an idea. I'm a casting guy here. I got an idea. Let's get that old woman from the Wendy's commercial and cast her in Moving Violations. Even though she can't say "Where's the beef," so legally she can't say it. That's smart casting. 401 area code says, in 1982, I borrowed my cousin's Sony Walkman. Early morning, sitting on the beach, facing the ocean. Insert Steely Dan's Gaucho, press play, and I'm in the studio with the band. The sound was like nothing I had ever heard on a cassette. Well, that's because it's a Steely Dan record. All Steely Dan records are unbelievably, beautifully, impeccably produced and sound incredible. So, yeah, I guess one of your first experiences with a Walkman and headphones listening to Gaucho, or any Steely Dan album for that matter, would have to be a good experience considering the quality of the sound of those albums. All right, how about this, the fantastic desktop fax machine? We still have fax machines here.
That God knows why.
I guess we have a copier. We also have a copier where you can fax, you know, or send an email, like a visual email. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like go to the copier, press this, and then automatically the image gets sent to whatever email address you send to, or phone number.
That's pretty cool.
Fax number, yeah. I used that this past year to send my my tax information to my accountant.
Ooh.
Just boom, right here in the middle of the night. Send it off to him.
We're going to take a break here, folks. Got to send my taxes in.
No, this was before work.
Oh, okay.
I didn't do it while I was on the show. I was like, hang on a second. Let's do an extra thing. So the fax table, the desktop fax machine, email wasn't afforded to us back then. So office life sucked in the 80s due to technological limitations of print copiers and landline phones. Universal popularity of the fax machine slowly caught on with American business, creating a faster way to share documents, photos, and secret messages with others across the nation.
Secret messages.
You remember the fax machine plays a big part in Die Hard 2.
Of course.
Where he has the line, he uses the airport's fax machine, and he has the line where she's like, hey, would you like to grab a drink? And then he shows his wedding ring, and he goes, just the fax, ma'am. And he takes the fax. Because he gets fingerprints faxed.
Woo!
He faxes over some fingerprints.
That's what we call acting.
Yeah. I love that movie. I love Die Hard 2.
Who directed Die Hard 2?
Rennie Harlan.
That's it, Rennie Harlan.
Yeah. I love it as much as the first, if not more. I love it. I absolutely love Die Hard 2. How about the Kenner Star Wars The Force lightsaber? I bet these things sold like hotcakes. The year it was released was 1990, which is also the year of Empire Strikes Back. So I'd imagine it was probably coincided with the release of that movie. Numerous toy manufacturers flooded the market with flimsy and terribly made lightsaber replicas. The Force was strong in Kenner. Well, didn't Kenner have the rights to all the Star Wars stuff?
They did. They were geniuses. They got in early, and they made all of them.
So basically, those other companies were making something that resembled a lightsaber, but they weren't allowed to call it a lightsaber.
Correct.
They had to call it like glow sword or something.
Sword bro.
Yeah, sword bro. The company created the best of the glowing fight sticks, even adding some unique touches as the hollow shafts that sucked in air to make humming noises when they were swung around. Oh, I remember that.
Yeah. You get a bunch of kids in a room just going, neum.
Yeah.
I bet Bill Leff's got one.
Yeah. I think Eric or Colin has one, because when the Star Wars movies came out, the new ones, obviously. Because they're both Star Wars fanatics. Eric, especially Eric. Eric likes the prequels. That's how much...
Good Lord.
Yeah. He backs Attack of the Clones.
Oh, yeah, and he gives me a hard time for Alien versus Predator.
Right.
Get out of here, man.
Well, he backs all three of the prequels. But anyway, whenever we have like a Star Wars movie that comes out, I always invite the guys down to the studio, bring their toys, because they've got they've got like collections of toys and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. What the hell is the name of the roly-poly new droid?
The Droidica?
BB-8.
Oh, BB-8. Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so BB-8, Colin had the remote control BB-8.
Oh,
he's got it.
Wow,
it rolled around the studio and it makes all kinds of noise. Yeah. And so he brought that down, and we videoed it and put the video up on the, you know.
Yeah.
So 1 year, if I'm not mistaken, I think it was Colin or Eric, well, those are the only two that came down, had a lightsaber, had one of those lightsaber things. But this BB-8 thing is really cool. I think it cost Colin a pretty buck. It's an app, and it's on your tablet. You put it on your tablet, and you can control it through your tablet. So we had his tablet here with the app going. And BB-8's just rolling around making all kinds of noise. through the studio, and he hit the wall and broke apart at one point. Like his head fell off. His head fell off.
Well, you know who the voice of BB-8 is, right?
Is it Hader?
Yeah, Bill Hader.
That's what I thought.
And also John Ralphio did a little bit. The guy, what's that guy's name? Ben something from Parks and Rec who plays John Ralphio.
Oh, right. Oh, God, he's funny.
Yeah.
He and Jenny Slate. Oh, my God.
Money, please.
Oh, my God. Hilarious. But anyway, so the other thing that the BB-8 does is Colin said, you know, it's got a little pop, like you can like sit it on a little charger thing so that it can charge. And while it's sitting there, you can turn it on and it'll, you know, it'll still be sort of like there. And it reacts. If you watch a Star Wars movie with BB-8, it reacts to certain scenes.
Does it react to itself?
Yeah,
I'm guessing?
It reacts to itself.
So it sees BBC, yeah. BB-8.
And then like he makes noise. And there are certain scenes that BB-8 gets scared. Like he'll shake a little bit in the thing. That was pretty cool. But I love that. He said he watched the Star Wars movies with BB-8, and BB-8 was like in the room.
Just tweaking.
Making weird noises and stuff. And recognizing himself on the screen.
That's amazing.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's so we're talking about, you know, a toy from 1980 that has a hollowed out tube at the end, so it sounds like a lightsaber, and now we've got BB-8s that actually interact with you while watching a Star Wars movie.
2019's weird.
It is weird.
It's freaking me out.
All right, this is the last one that we're going to do because we're going to take a break. We got the terrible weather forecast, and then we'll do some Big Brother talk, too. And I had one of these. The Tomy Racing Turbo Dashboard. No, I didn't have this one, but I had one of those. I had like a fake steering wheel kind of a thing with the gear shift.
Yeah.
1983. Laugh it up if you must, but back in the days, this was the closest thing we had to Gran Turismo or Forza. Tomy's driving simulator set the standard. It set the standard for racing games on the home game circuit by creating a machine equipped with 4-speed gear shifts, speedometer, key ignition, and digital viewing screen. And it was best with a. We remember it best as the D battery killer. So you had a screen. It's a dashboard, full on dashboard, steering wheel, key, gear shift, and a screen that showed you where you were driving. So it would have driving simulations as you were driving. So you could actually like do a driving simulation game with this thing, the Tomy Racing Turbo Dashboard from Tomy, not Toma, with Dave Musante.
If only.
Tony Musante. Toma. All right. So there you go. Let's take a break here. We got the weather here, and then when we come back, we'll close out the show with a little Big Brother talk. If you watched the second episode of Big Brother last night, I promise I will give you no spoilers, but I will tell you who I'm kind of liking now and who I'm kind of rooting for. And we'll tell you a little bit about what happened on last night's episode. Episode 2 of season 21 of Big Brother is happening. So it happened last night, and the next episode starts on Sunday, so we'll talk a little bit about it now. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. And was that a request?
Yes, it was.
We can't hear all three of them, though, so only one.
Yeah, just I wanted to throw it in there because that's from listener Chris.
Okay.
He wanted to hear just a little bit of Smashing Pumpkins.
Okay. There you go. We'll do Triple Play Thursday again next week. Yeah, man, you're playing Thursday. And coming up at 5 o'clock, Steve Grzanich has the opening bell. And coming up next, the stories that matter with Vic Vaughn from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Hey, Tom, tell everybody about your latest podcast. Why don't you?
Oh, yeah. So we talked to a fellow who runs a screening series called Metal Movie Nights.
Yeah.
And this past Saturday, he showed a movie called Highway to Hell. Have you ever seen that?
I have.
With the Stiller family?
Yeah.
So we talked a lot about how, you know, Mr. Costanza was in hell and all that kind of stuff. And it's a really cool screening series. They don't do exclusively like hardcore or anything movies. I think they're trying to show Legend next time.
Legend?
Yeah.
The Tim Curry Devil, Tom Cruise?
Yep, that's the one.
It's a terrible movie.
I know, but it's been very requested of them that people have an affinity for Legend, but it's kind of a whole night. So they have their run of the Music Box Lounge for about 2 hours prior to the showtime. And they have a DJ playing metal, playing some metal songs all through those 2 hours. So if you're into that sort of thing, like me and my co-host Connor are, keep an eye out for him. You can follow him on Instagram at Metal Movie Nights. And it was just a lot of fun chatting. Yeah.
All right. Okay, cool. Well, there you go. Look for that. And so Big Brother season 21 kicked off on Tuesday. And then last night was the second part of the big two-night premiere. Now, you're all caught up? Are you all caught up?
Yeah.
All right. We talked a little bit. It's tough at this point to really, you know, start rooting for someone because it's so early.
Sure.
And your mind changes, as at least mine does, as I watch Big Brother throughout the season. My opinions of certain cast members change throughout. So, but last night was a fun episode. They did this extra challenge where one of the house guests was the camp director, and that was Jackson Mikey, because some people are now calling him Mikey, because there's Jack and Jackson, and Jack is the Aquaman lookalike, who I actually like.
He's got a fun personality. Yeah. He seems to be genuinely nice to everybody.
Yeah, no, I like him so far. I do. I, you know, of course, him teaming up with Jackson is a little aggravating because that Jackson guy's an idiot. So, but let's see. I am now officially on Cliff Hogg the Third's camp.
Team Hogg, baby. Team Hogg.
I like the guy. I like him. Especially after last night's episode. No spoilers here. We won't spoil anything if you haven't seen it yet. If you got it on your DVR, you're going to watch it tonight or today or something. But it was very entertaining. Already the whispering and the planning, and we've already got alliances forming.
I know.
I mean, it didn't take long. It usually doesn't take very long to that stuff starts, falling into place.
Yeah, especially with these people who've been watching the show for however knows how long.
And then between Bobby and Christy, there is this secret between the two of them.
Or is it Tommy? It's Tommy, right?
Tommy? Oh, yeah, Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy, right? Yeah. Tommy, the Broadway dancer.
And he's hilarious. He's still great. Consistently so funny.
He's hilarious. Anyway, they have this secret between them that they can't let anybody know, which is that Christy dated a member of his family. So they knew each other before, you know, most of the time, unless they have some sort of twist. The Big Brother house guests, upon arrival, do not know each other. They're all strangers. So this is a secret that they're keeping so that there isn't a target on their back because they both know each other and they're going to have each other's back and all that stuff. The challenge that four people were put up for,
banished.
They were banished. And a guy in a squirrel costume would come in and put them in a bag and drag them out the door. As they were banished, so that was funny.
Oh man, that was like near the peak of the episode for me.
Oh yeah, no. The squirrel. I mean, you know how I feel about mascots and stuff. So a guy in a squirrel costume with a giant bag dragging, you know, house guests out inside the bag. Yeah. And then the challenge was that three of them were going to come back into the house, and one of them was going to be gone. So they had to do this challenge, and the challenge is really funny. And pretty entertaining. So I won't give away who was the one who got eliminated. But it was entertaining nonetheless. Holly is the wine safari guide. I still don't get a read on her. David, the photographer from Atlanta, he thought he was going to do really well in challenges, and it didn't seem that was the thing. Nicole, who is the preschool aide, who is very awkward and weird. She's already in an alliance.
Yep.
Then we got Tommy, who is very entertaining. He's the Broadway dancer from New York. And his accent is fantastic, by the way.
Yeah. It makes me feel like he might be putting it on, but there's no way.
Yeah.
It's too ingrained.
Catherine, she is the digital marketing executive, blonde from Texas. I still don't, can't quite get a handle on her. Okay. I like Kemi.
Kemi's funny.
I think she's great. And she's got an attitude. And she seems like she may turn out to be like very confrontational because there's always going to be those moments where people are screaming at each other in Big Brother and they have the big fights and stuff. And I think she's going to be a part of those. But I like her. I like her. I think she's very entertaining. Jessica from Chicago. Always got to root for the person from Chicago. And some stuff happens with her that's pretty.
Yeah, very. Yeah.
Pretty interesting. Get a little complicated. And then, of course, there's Cliff Hogg the Third.
My boy.
Yeah, Team Hog, 53-year-old guy. And then Ovi Kabir, I love this guy, too. I think he's really great, and I'm kind of rooting for him. Nick, he's in an alliance already, and I still don't know quite what to make of him. He seems a little funny, but...
He's got by far the worst haircut of everybody. And it is unbelievable.
Yeah.
I don't know what he told his barber.
Yeah. I think he said, give me the mo. I think that's what he said.
He does. He looks like a member.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
He said, give me the mo. And then we have Jack, who I like. He's the guy who looks exactly like Jason Momoa.
Yeah.
I also love the fact that in episode one, I can't remember which girl it was, says he does look a lot like Jason Mimosa. Then there's Jackson Mikey. Don't like this guy at all. First house guest that I actively dislike. Christy Murphy, I really like. She's the one who's got the secret. She also, another reason why I like her is because she resembles Elizabeth Moss.
She's kind of a hippie too.
I like her. Yeah. Sam Smith, I don't know if the tattoo is bad, but he's starting to grow on me personality wise.
He's the trucker, right?
Yeah. He's the trucker guy with the terrible tattoo.
That tattoo is just,
yeah.
He seems a little bit much for me at times. I'm just like, okay, too hard.
Yeah. But I liked him a little more in the second episode than I did in the first. Annalise, who is the soccer star, still not quite sure about her. Isabella Wang, I like her. I like her.
She's funny.
She's, by the way, she's going by Bella, which is her evil side.
Her alter ego.
Her alter ego.
That
that's
likes
right.
to rip shots.
That's rip shots when she's Bella. So there's your the second episode was a lot of fun. We'll continue to talk a little bit about it. I finally have someone on my show who I can talk with Big Brother about. So, Tom, I'm glad you're a fan.
Oh man! Ever since, especially when I moved into my first apartment, me and my roommate, we only had like satellite TV, or not satellite, the like antenna TV.
Yeah.
So we were just like, well, it looks like we're watching Big Brother all summer.
Yeah.
And we were camp counselors too. So.
Oh, that's funny. Well, anyway, it'll come back. It'll be back on Sunday night, the next new episode, and we'll talk about it then. And by the way, remind me who's on the show again tomorrow?
Oh, yeah. DJ Cash Era.
Oh, good. Cash is going to be on.
Yeah.
She is a producer, works here at WGN. She also is a DJ. She's going to DJ at the Pride Parade, and she has some great DJ stories.
Oh, she's
we'll talk to her. And then all of our regular Friday features will also happen.